I'm going to call the Housing and Public Health Finance Committee, committee together, and we have the omnibus bill before us today for public testimony between now and 1:30. And we will be adjourning at 1:30, and we have, looks like about a dozen, we'll be recessing at 1:30, thank you for that correction. We'll be recessing at 1:30 and coming back at 2 to do the markup and amendments. And so this is the time for public testimony. What we're going to do, members, since we have so many people who want to testify, about a dozen it looks like, more than that. And I do want to say if there's more people in the audience who want to testify, we're going to take those who have called in or written or emailed first. And if we have time, we'll get to others. But this is going to be a time for the public to speak to us. We are not going to be asking them questions or, you know, actually quizzing them. We really need to make sure that they can have the time to give us this input. So members will have plenty of time to reflect on that and discuss their information they give us later. 3 minutes is the maximum we're going to allow for the number of witnesses. Otherwise, we won't have a chance to get through them, and I know we all really do want to hear from the public. Representative Peterson.
Thank you, Madam Chair. And will they tell us which piece of the legislation they're referring to so that we can track with them?
Okay, let's make that be a request.
Mm-hmm.
Members of the audience, any of you who are planning to testify, please let us know if you're referring to a specific piece of the legislation or you just love the whole bill. Okay. Is that a division? It's the same one we had last night. Okay. Oh, okay. All right. We have a list, and we'll go through it. And again, about 3 minutes. Again, this is to hear from the public. We are not quizzing the people who are talking with us, unfortunately. We don't have that time for today. First person is Marina McManus from Anoka County, Licensed Public Health Association. Welcome to the committee, Ms. McManus.
Thank you, Madam Chair.
Madam 3 minutes, Chair. Please. I'm sorry. If you can keep your comments to 3 minutes, please, that would be very helpful.
I'm going to whiz through it.
Okay.
Madam Chair, members of the committee, my name is Marina McManus. I'm Director of Anoka County Community Health and Environmental Services Department. I'm here testifying on behalf of Local Public Health Association, which is an organization comprised of public health leadership from 87 counties and 5 large cities. I'm going to comment on the following portions of your bill. I'm going to comment on home visiting, public health emergency preparedness, lead screening, and tuberculosis. As an organization of local public health leaders, we could comment, obviously, on all the portions of this bill as it affects the health, safety, and well-being of all Minnesotans. And we are looking at those particular components in public health, dealing with health protection and monitoring, prevention of disease and disabilities, health risk screening, health promotion, assuring basic needs, and working with others on individual, family, and community needs. The following priorities that I'm going to comment on were those priorities that were identified by our local public health association. First of all, on home visiting. And I want to thank Representative Lane for her lead authorship of this legislation and also for others that helped prepare this legislation, which is an initiative from Local Public Health Association and from Ready for K. And this is what we consider a substantial reinvestment that will restore much of the funding that we lost in 2003. So this is an important consideration for us. The partnership that we have pulled together with Ready for K to promote this legislation really does demonstrate our positive working relations in the community and how we work with and through others in positive ways for improving the health and well-being of children. One of the comments I do want to make about this portion of the bill has to do with the reporting needs and the outcome measurement. Representative Huntley has in his bill funding and policy relating to what's called Minnesota Public Health Information Network and with electronic health record grants what we're looking at in this particular legislation is important for us to consider how do we collect our data, what are those data standards, and what's our mechanism for reporting and measuring. So,
Ms. McManus, you have about 30 seconds left.
Okay, moving on. Thank you, Madam Chair. I'll be back. Emergency preparedness. Emergency preparedness is a core function of public health at the local level, working with our management emergency managers partners. I think one of the things that we want to comment on this today, we've had federal funding and local funding. The state funding is very critical to us as we consider this now to be a core function in public health as we improve our capacity to respond to emergencies. On tuberculosis, your support for this effort is very important. We've had increased cases. In Anoka County alone, we've gone from 2 to 3 cases of active TB to up to 11 to 14 with a lot more cases for investigation. Takes a lot of time and effort.
Ms. McManus, time is up, and in deference, I'm going to do this with everyone. We have 3 minutes, and I need to ask you to
thanks for your support for the lab, and okay. Thank you for your support for the State Health Department that helps keep the strong partnership for your public health system.
Thank you so much. Appreciate your brevity there. Next person is Megan Waltz. Ready for K. Welcome to the committee.
Thank you, Madam Chair. Madam Chair and members, my name is Megan Waltz. I'm the Public Policy Analyst at Ready for K. Ready for K is a nonprofit organization with the vision of ensuring that every young child in Minnesota enters kindergarten encouraged, supported, and fully prepared for learning success. I'm here today to thank the Chair and members for the inclusion of additional TANF funding for home visiting. Home visiting is a vital service for our most at-risk families. Research has shown that home visiting has some of the same effects as high-quality early care and education in terms of school readiness, lower rates of remedial education, and high school graduation, and higher rates of high school graduation. Other effects include fewer instances of child abuse and less dependence on state subsidy programs. The positive effects of home visiting can be seen not only in young children, but also in the parents being served. Teen parents who experience home visiting experience less remedial education and higher rates of graduation as well. Parents who experience home visiting also feel less stress in terms of child rearing, which directly benefits young children. Home visiting is a voluntary service which helps to build positive relationships between parent and child. Research has shown that when young children feel safe and trust their caregivers, all aspects of development significantly improve: cognitive, physical, and social-emotional. Again, I would like to thank the Chair and members, and especially Representative Lane for bringing forth this legislation, for their commitment to our youngest citizens and their families. Thank you for the opportunity today.
Thank you. I mean, right under the line. I really appreciate that. This is a good role model for our next witness. Ms. Butler Phillips. After that, I'll just say maybe you could move over to the second offender if you want. Julia Earl, Samuel Yaman, and Elizabeth Hines are the next three. Welcome to the committee.
Good morning, or good afternoon, Madam Chair and committee members. Sue Watlow Phillips. I'm Executive Director of Elam Transitional Housing. We serve 6,000 people in preventing people from becoming homeless through rapid exit transitional housing and permanent housing through the Housing Trust Fund. My comments will be in regards to the TANF, use of TANF dollars, the Family Homeless Prevention, Transitional Housing, Housing Trust Fund, and permanent funding for affordable housing for people with limited income. There are 3 handouts that are coming around right now that I will briefly touch on. One is my testimony. I'm going to run through that very quickly. You will have that, hopefully, as you are looking at strategies on the omnibus bill and as you are looking at strategies. So there might be a few minor things that you might want to work out with the Senate on the different bills.
Yes.
If you haven't had a chance to go to the zoo yet and see the babies, I encourage you to do that, too, because there's lots of tails wagging over there, too. So as we talk about tails, there's a good place to go to get some humor in this whole thing. First of all, the plan that you have before you, I know, is the best you could do with the amount of money that leadership gave you. But let me say, it is not a very good strategic plan. It's not a very good business plan to address the housing needs of people with limited income. That's my first point. Second point is in regards to TANF. TANF should be used to increase assistance to grants for folks so that people can rent their own housing in the private market. And they don't have to go through a program like Elam Transitional Housing to get dollars to rent housing in the community. Number 3, the impact of the budget the way the budget is set up and having the tails cut off, there is no way as a nonprofit that I can hire permanent staff and expand the capacity of our program, because in 2 years you're going to take that money away. So as we're looking at trying to make some of these programs statewide, that's almost impossible to make that happen and to increase that. While it's great money for the first 2 years, be homeless during the first 2 years, because in this budget you're not going to get much help in housing also.
About 30 seconds or so.
Okay. Very specifically, very quickly, on TANF, Transitional Housing, and Housing Trust Fund, the TANF dollars don't work very well there. The final piece is on the dedicated funds. If you take a look very quickly at the tax expenditure budget and the other piece that talks about the federal, and don't expect that the feds are going to help you a whole lot, let me just very quickly tell you what the numbers are. In this biennium, we will spend $1.52 billion on subsidies to homeowners. We brought over $228.9 million in tails. If you add up the mortgage interest, you add up the property tax, and you add up the capital gains tax expenditure budget. If we have that kind of money for me as a homeowner and for you as a homeowner, we have the money to provide housing for people with very limited income. So as you go home today, hopefully tonight sometime, or this weekend sometime, have to get done with budget, I encourage you, if you haven't done your taxes, do them. But if you have, look at Schedule A if you're a homeowner. Because that's what we subsidize you right now from the federal and state level on your mortgage interest write-off and your property tax. And remember, there are folks tonight that don't have a home. Thank you.
Thank you. And members, we do have handouts from the last witness. Julia Earle. Welcome to the committee.
Thank you. Madam Chair and representatives, my name is Julia Earle. I am the Preventing Harm Minnesota Program Director at the Children's Environmental Health Program of the Minnesota Environmental Partnership. I'm here today to testify in favor of the health tracking and biomonitoring legislation. Although I have a Master of Science degree, I support the proposed legislation based not only on scientific testimony, which will be provided by Samuel Yaman, but also for moral reasons as a children's environmental health advocate and parent in Minnesota. I might also add that I had a tumor removed from my breast earlier this year. Fortunately, it was benign. I wouldn't wish this stress and trauma of that experience on anyone, and I was lucky. Scientists, healthcare providers, legislators, parents, and environmental health advocates are increasingly aware of toxic body burden studies that indicate the pervasive and insidious nature of the spread of toxicants through the environment into our bodies. Regarding children's environmental health, developing fetuses and children undergo extremely rapid and unique stages of growth and development. An extremely small perturbation to their systems at this time may have deleterious health consequences that may not even show up until puberty or adulthood, and that may affect them for the rest of their lives, including asthma, cancer, neurological disorders, and learning and behavioral disabilities. For Minnesota children's sake, who have no voice in public policy forums, for scientific reasons and economic reasons, I endorse this legislation and encourage you to support it as well. I'd also like to say that I support the Cancer Registry for similar reasons in terms of laying a sound groundwork for good public policy in our state. Thank you very much.
Thank you, Ms. Earle. Samuel Yaman. Welcome to the committee.
Thank you, Madam Chair. Samuel Yaman, public health scientist with Minnesota Center for Environmental Advocacy. This legislation is designed to help reduce the burden of chronic disease on families and the healthcare system, specifically referring to the environmental health tracking and the biomonitoring components of this bill. As such, it is supported not only by our organization, but also by Minnesota Public Health Association, Minnesota Council of Health Plans, and Lutheran Coalition for Public Policy, among others. Science has shown that pollutants found in air, water, and soil can cause or aggravate many chronic disease conditions, but we don't have solid information on the proportion of disease cases that are related to environment. This uncertainty makes it exceedingly difficult to protect the public from these preventable illnesses. Environmental health tracking is the best way to close this data gap and provide health professionals and the public with solid, reliable information. In the longer term, the information generated by these efforts would help to ensure that Minnesota's regulatory programs and disease prevention efforts are focused on real threats to public health. Over 20 states around the country have successfully established environmental health tracking systems. However, Minnesota is lagging behind. This area of public health practice is very cost effective. With a relatively small investment, we could take a big step toward reducing the human suffering and economic costs of several types of chronic disease. If we choose not to begin this important work, Minnesota will continue to fight chronic disease with costly treatments rather than with cost-effective prevention. Thank you.
Thank you very much. Elizabeth Hines.
Thank you. My name is Elizabeth Hintz, and thank you for this opportunity, Madam Chair and committee members. I work for Minneapolis Public Schools. I'm the district liaison for homeless and highly mobile students. And I just wanted to briefly take this opportunity to thank you for considering and funding the Runaway and Homeless Youth Act. The provisions in this legislation are so critical to even beginning to address the needs of runaway and homeless youth. In Minneapolis public schools alone last year, there were more than 1,000 kids in grades 9 through 12 who were identified as homeless. Many of them were runaway and homeless. And 89% of them, 89% of the identified kids as homeless and runaway are attending schools statewide. I'm sharing my time here with Susan Phillips of Lutheran Social Services, and she would like to say a few words.
Good afternoon. My name is Susan Phillips, Madam Chair and members of the committee. I have the privilege of working with runaway and homeless youth through Lutheran Social Service here in the metro area. And I came today to say thank you to you all for your courage to appropriate a significant amount of money to the Runaway and Homeless Youth Act. I believe that you are visionaries. You have decided to step up to the plate like no one has before and say that these young people deserve a chance. And they are watching and listening too, and for the first time in many of their lives, they're saying, wow, we have a voice, and there are adults who will listen to us. And so on behalf of the young people that I work with and the young people that we hope to serve through the Runaway Homeless Youth Act in years to come, we thank you very, 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 very much.
Thank you. Mr. Michael Dahl. And after Michael is Julie Manwaren and Twyla Brace. Welcome to the committee.
Madam Chair, members of the committee, my name is Michael Dahl. I'm Executive Director with the Minnesota Coalition for the Homeless. First off, I do want to acknowledge that this committee has done a tremendous job at setting saying that homelessness and affordable housing are priorities for this committee, and I want to recognize that. I also want to say that I appreciate that you have put a significant amount of resources into helping unaccompanied youth, also a significant increase to emergency shelter. I do have a couple of points that I need to make to this committee regarding how the use of funds makes, how the appropriation of funds makes them very difficult to use. First, extensive use of one-time and TANF funds has already been brought up that we cannot build capacity for new programs with one-time funds. So if you're going to do one-time funds and TANF dollars, will you commit to raise money in future years to fund new programs that we hope to create in the next 2 years? Secondly, people are becoming homeless because there are deficiencies in our current welfare system. TANF dollars are best spent in the welfare system. We understand that you had only limited funds to work with, but they really are best spent on welfare purposes. Thirdly, regarding TANF funds, is that we're creating a little bit of a mission drift. Transitional housing programs are supposed to be there to serve people for up to 2 years. TANF funds allow us to only serve people for up to 4 months. We are not able to meet the purposes of the program. Third, Family Homeless Prevention, you appropriated a significant amount of one-time and CANA funds to this program. That's fine if all we want to do is serve additional people. But the mission of the Family Homeless Prevention Program is to be innovative. And we want to grow to new parts of the state. You can't grow to new parts of the state if you have one-time funds. Do like the House, like the Senate does, match the governor on doubling funds for family homeless prevention with real money. And then lastly, I know this committee has done it before. We need you to go to leadership and demand real money for this committee. You need to do something to get rid of these one-time and TANF funds and create structural change on homelessness and affordable housing issues. Thank you.
Thank you, Mr. Dahl. Julie Manwaren, welcome to the committee.
Thank you, Madam Chair. I'm Julie Manwaren, the Executive Director for Simpson Housing Services, and I've brought along two of our sheltered guests who are now in housing to be able to bring this back to mind. I've met several of you when you came to Simpson's shelter earlier this session and visited us, and we very much appreciate that. I'd like to echo what Sue Watlow Phillips and Michael Dahl shared with you regarding our great appreciation for your additional support for transitional housing and for emergency shelter dollars. It is absolutely critical that we receive some additional assistance. I joined Simpson Housing Services a year ago as the executive director and came to the organization that was suffering from a $158,000 deficit. We currently have to raise $500,000 just to keep our shelters, both for men and for women, operating, in addition to the limited funds that we receive from the public sector. I think that it's a good reminder to remember the role of government has been neglected for many, many years. And post-Katrina and post-9/11, we were reminded, and many of you are here because of that reminder, that the government needs to be protecting its most vulnerable citizens. We need you to participate as a partner with us. I wanted to give you a sense of, for those who think that the religious community or that volunteers can fully carry the load for this, I wanted to give you a sense of what our volunteers did in the past year. They provided 72% of the overnight staffing at our shelters. They provided 362 meals at our men's shelter and 338 meals at our women's shelter. They made 40,000 sandwiches that we could send out with our guests when they left at 7 o'clock in the morning.
Ms. Benoit?
Yes. I'm done? Okay. They contribute significant funding, more than we receive from the government. We really need your help. And I can't tell you enough from our transitional housing perspective how the TANF dollars really are very difficult to administer and to make work for the families that we serve. Thank you very much for your support. We absolutely need it.
Thank you. Next person is Twyla Brace, and after Twyla Brace is Will Wilson, Byron White.
Madam Chair, members of the committee, my name is Twyla Brace.
Welcome to the committee.
Thank you. I'm from Citizens Council on Healthcare, and I have essentially a sort of a four-part testimony in these 3 minutes. So the first part has to do with the different data collection systems in here. And with the cancer registry, you're adding a consent for visitation, but there's no consent or notification for actually being in the registry. And I want you to know that, and we would like that kind of consent. And for the birth defects, before you actually start funding this as a state, we would like to make sure that there's true informed parent consent on it. For the newborn hearing screening, it's an opt-out, but it's an opt-out that's not a very good opt-out. Because the health department has already been found not to fully inform parents about the newborn genetic testing, which is what this section refers to. The filter paper for lead screening, we want you to understand that the filter paper will can be retained permanently, and it's the child's DNA, and we would really like to make sure that it wouldn't be retained permanently and that it would be single use only for the lead screening, or otherwise that it would be destroyed, or you'd have to get the parents' consent to do anything more with it after that point. And then for the heart disease and stroke, there's no language. That's on page 7. There's no language. There's no consent. And essentially because there's no language at all in statute, it really gives the health department the ability to do what they wish without any constraints. So that's the first part. The second part of my testimony has to do with home visiting. And you will see in what I, one of the things that I handed out to you, which says targeted home visiting at the top. If you look down about two-thirds on the page, you'll see that there's a check. There's two check boxes, and they say risk of maltreatment, yes or no. This system started and always has been about finding and preventing child abuse, and we want parents to understand that the individual who goes into their home and who contacts them is really one of the things they're there to look for and to prevent is child abuse. And they need to understand that that individual is a child abuser and may have a different, that individual is a mandated reporter on child abusing and may or may not have a different view of what that could mean, including spanking. So we really feel there should be much more of an informed consent. And as well, we look at the fact that the data is confidential, and we realize that all this data that's collected on the family can never actually see, which we don't think is a very good idea. The third part of my testimony has to do with disease surveillance, which is on page 14. And for you to understand that the other thing that I sent out has to do with the front page of the Pioneer Press. I think that was in 2002 or 2003, when the health department withdrew their rules to start collecting and requiring every hospital and health plan to send all this data on all of us without our consent or without our knowledge. And when you fund the disease surveillance, that will mean that the electronic medical records allow them to do that. And I'll also just say that we believe there has to be patient consent having to do with the environmental health tracking. Thank you.
Thank you very much for your testimony. Next, Will Wilson, and then behind Will would be Byron White.
Madam Chair and members, thank you for the opportunity to speak today. I'm here to talk about the delete all amendments, page 10, line 22 through 30. It's the suicide prevention grants. Thank you. Thank you for funding this. We were asking for more money to completely restore the program, which would have been about $1 million a year. This is about 60% of that. We understand it was a tight budget. And just so members are aware, I just would like to explain what this isn't. This is not Teen Screen. That will be traveling separately. That's in will be in the education budget. Our association supports Teen Screen, but I just want to be very clear that this does not include Teen Screen. So what it does include is funding for grantees around the state that will be that will go out on an RFP process through the Department of Health. And I'd just like to say that this is the full extent, what you see right here, the $600,000 a year. This is what Minnesota spends on suicide prevention, period. At the moment, it's zero. And so this, we really, really hope that this funding gets through this year. Madam Chair, we also would like to do a technical amendment. When you come to that, and I think I'd like to explain it a little bit. On line 10.24, I think we'd like to take out the piece that has to do with higher education. So from on 10.24, after the word program, delete all the way to line 10.28 up to the period. And that language was added in Representative Walker's committee. That was in more optimistic times when we thought we would get full funding for this, but what we'd like to do is make sure that the Department of Health has full discretion about how they prioritize these grants. So,
thank you very much.
Thank you, Madam Chair.
Next, Byron Slice. Welcome to the committee.
Thank you. My name is Byron White. I'm the Director of Government Relations for the Prairie Island Indian Community. I'm also a tribal member and a past member of the Prairie Island Tribal Council. Thank you for the opportunity to testify today in support of the amendment to the House File 2366. House File 2366 presently calls for the Commissioner of Health to compile a report on radiation emissions for Monticello, including the impact these emissions have on affected communities. The Prairie Island Indian community would like to see that the Prairie Island nuclear facility be included in these reports. There are presently two nuclear power plants in the state of Minnesota, one at Monticello, the other at Prairie Island. Both plants are owned by Xcel Energy and operated by the Nuclear Management Company. Both plants are more than 30 years old. At Prairie Island, there are two nuclear reactors in operation, and there are more than 20 large storage units of high-level radioactive waste sitting outside the plant. The Prairie Island plant is located just less than 600 yards from my community. In fact, Prairie Island is believed to be the closest community in the country to a nuclear power plant and nuclear waste storage site. At any given time, many thousands of people can be on Prairie Island, including tribal members, employees, and visitors. In addition, tens of thousands of people live in other communities not far from our reservation. The people of Prairie Island are no less concerned about potential exposure to radiation and no less at risk than those living in Monticello. For these reasons, the Prairie Island Indian community respectfully requests that the nuclear plant at Prairie Island be included in the proposed radiation study. Thank you.
Thank you, Mr. White. Thank you very much. Someone from the Minnesota Department of Health, I believe, wished to testify. Dr. Stein, welcome back to the committee.
Thank you, Madam Chair. I'm going to just introduce what we're here to speak about and then ask Dan Simonico of our staff to talk about sections 18 through 22 of the bill and section 64 relating to the filter paper test as a technology, and I'll let Dan Simonico introduce himself and speak to that.
Welcome. There you go.
Madam Chair, members of the committee, my name is Dan Simonic. I work for the State Health Department. I supervise the team that runs the lead surveillance database, so we are the ones that collect the ongoing data. We're here to address some concerns over the use of the term filter paper in sections 18 through 22. The term filter paper is actually a technology, a way of analyzing the blood lead. It isn't a blood test type that is typically broken down into capillary and venous. And it confuses the statute to have that term in there. We went back into the 2005 data and took a look at the capillary results. The filter paper typically is used as a capillary test. It's a finger stick and then put on the paper. And we found in 2005, 66% of the capillary tests that were reported to MDH were not confirmed by a follow-up test. So only one-third of those tests were actually confirmed with a follow-up test. When we looked at the MedTox data, which is a local company that uses the filter paper, that rate went improved, but still was 50% of those tests were not confirmed by a follow-up test. In section 64, we are proposing a study where we bring together the experts in the field and generate recommendations. At this point, I guess we feel it would be most prudent to take the filter paper reference out, let us do the study with the experts, and we can then come back with recommendations on what is the best approach for using this technology with the two capillary confirmation for a lead test.
Thank you.
Thank you.
Thank you very much. Jack Horner. After Mr. Horner is Kathleen Schuler, and then Mark Peters. Welcome to the committee.
Thank you, Madam Chair. Jack Horner, representing Minnesota Multi-Housing Association. Madam Chair, first of all, we want to thank you very much for your consideration and an issue that we had, as you know, a lot of concern with regarding mandatory lead dust swipes in rental housing. Our group has worked very hard and long over many years to help to preserve, to create lead safety, to reduce lead hazards for children and in rental housing. We know that a study has been proposed. If that's enacted and becomes law, as we always have in the past, we will certainly cooperate and work with you. And we have enjoyed working with you and are very grateful for your consideration in this bill. Thank you, Madam Chair.
Thank you, Mr. Horner. appreciate your comments. Okay, Schulz. Welcome to the committee.
Madam Chair, members of the committee, my name is Kathleen Schuler. I'm with the Institute for Agriculture and Trade Policy, and I'm a senior policy analyst with that organization. I'm here to speak in favor of Section 54, page 57, related to the regulation of toxic flame retardants. We had originally proposed to phase out three types of commercial flame retardants. There was a lot of controversy with relationship to decabromodiphenyl ether, which is one of the chemicals that we were trying to regulate. These flame retardants are very toxic. They're building up in Minnesota's environment. They're global pollutants, and there are safer alternatives. So rather than, in order to address the controversy, we compromised and asked the Pollution Control Agency to do a report on DECA rather than to phase it out immediately. So this bill would provide funding for the Pollution Control Agency to evaluate the toxicity of DECA, to look at whether this is a problem in Minnesota's environment, whether it affects public health, to look at the availability of safer alternatives and the technical feasibility of those alternatives. So I would very much appreciate you funding this report. Thank you.
Thank you, Ms. Schiller. Mark Peters, it looks like we are going to have time for more witnesses, so if some of you who did not sign up to testify want to, please just send your names forward and we'll try to include you. Welcome to the committee.
Thank you. My name is Mark Peters. I'm executive, Madam Chair, members of the committee. My name is Mark Peters. I'm executive director of Lutheran Coalition for Public Policy in Minnesota. And I'm here today to speak in favor of House File 1621 and also to express appreciation for the funding that you have put forward for this really important work. This has been Lutheran Coalition for Public Policy is a partner ministry of the six Minnesota synods, and we represent about 1,200 congregations across Minnesota. This has been listed as a priority issue for our office for over several years now, especially in regards to children's health. Children are especially vulnerable to environmental toxins, whether they're known or coming to be known. To do the biomonitoring, which to stress that it's confidential, it's opt-in, and there's a consent form that's very clear on this, that piece is really critical to being able to connect the dots on what is an increasing link, or what might be a hot spot or an increasing link to health effects, especially indicated by children and communities and their families. I think this is a very prudent approach. There are 20 other states that have already got this underway. I know you've heard testimony on this today. I think the Minnesota Department of Health has a brand new lab. They've got great scientists, and we've got the opportunity here to get some really good scientific data, because just not knowing is not a very comforting answer for parents who have kids that might be experiencing, or family members that might be experiencing increasing number of things that are being potentially linked, and just not knowing, we got to start connecting the dots here. So that's my testimony for today.
Thank you very much.
Thank you.
We have another witness. Welcome.
Thank you, Madam Chairwoman. My name is Dr. Karen Ephraim. I am a mother of three, a pediatrician, and a policy analyst here on behalf of EdWatch and the National Physician Center to speak in opposition to the home visiting legislation in Article 2. A 1999 review of a national review of six Healthy Families America home visiting programs revealed the following, quote, no well-constructed control group study of an HFA program has shown clear success in reducing child abuse rates or measures of child abuse potential in a given target population, end quote. That study also found that comprehensive services could cost as much as $47,000 per family in $1999 and still show no improvement in the cognitive development of the child. In addition, proponents of home visiting programs admitted during congressional testimony last fall that national studies performed in 2004 and 2005 were not effective in decreasing child abuse rates. Regarding parental rights, evaluations of home visiting programs raised concerns with the following: medical record review without consent, consent not necessarily being voluntary for participation, sometimes women being asked during labor. Visitors may only have 4 to 5 days of training. Data collection, which Ms. Graves brought up in her testimony, and families unknowingly giving up their Fourth Amendment rights because of the it's not clearly stated that the visitors are mandated child abuse reporters. Finally, more recent studies of the Nurse Family Partnership, which is a well-controlled home visiting program that did show some significant improvements in maternal behavior, found no effect on any of the following: child behavior problems or emotional regulation, mother-child interaction, the child's mental development, and the mother's educational achievement or employment. So we have concerns about, many concerns about these programs, and at the very minimum, we would want a much better consent with a Tennyson warning and a clear explanation of the home visitor's role.
Thank you, Ms. Pepper. Next we have Sam Walseth. And after Sam Walseth will be Deb Bushlick.
Madam Chair and members, Sam Walseth with the Sustainable Resources Center. I'm just here today to thank you for the time and energy you spent this session talking about childhood lead poisoning and the need to be more aggressive in that effort. I want to thank you for the appropriation that's listed in the bill. This is the most significant progress we've seen in childhood lead poisoning in quite some time. So thank you very much. Madam Chair, for the record, we would concur with the testimony from the Department of Health that at this time it's more appropriate to go forward with the study on filter paper technology, and that should be then altered through, I think it's sections 18 through 22 of the bill at this time. However, Madam Chair, we do oppose the A13 amendment that is out on the table that would strip out all of the progress we're making in your legislation this year to end childhood lead poisoning. So we have trouble with that amendment, but generally, thank you very much again for the work that your committee has done on this issue this session. Thank you.
Thank you, Mr. Wilson. Member Schlick.
Madam Chair and committee members,
welcome.
Thank you for the opportunity to testify. I'm Deborah Schlick. I'm the director of the Affirmative Options Coalition. We're a statewide coalition of about 50 organizations that either provide direct service to low-income people, are faith-based networks, or advocacy organizations. We advocate for an effective welfare-to-work program and to make work possible, ensure that work pays, and that we maintain an adequate safety net. So I want to echo and add a little bit of detail to the concerns about the use of TANF funding for the housing programs. We believe that adequate and affordable housing is a key part of making work possible. But we want you to understand that as complicated as it has been to use TANF in these programs in the last couple of years, it will become more complicated. Across the hall, they are working on a bill that's going to restructure the Minnesota Family Investment Program. Many of the families with the deepest challenges on MFIP, the families most likely end up in transitional housing or need housing services, are not going to be TANF eligible as we restructure the program. It will narrow the pool of families for whom this money can be spent so that the administrative complexities will grow. And we do share the concern that as we shift TANF money to services, we take it away from the ability to give families the resources to leave poverty, to increase their income, increase their education, training levels. And finally, we'd ask, if, as you're looking at this bill and your very important mission around housing, that it's unlikely that across the hall they can maintain the ability to eliminate the housing penalty that's currently in MFIP. This would be a great use of TANF money to address important housing needs. Thank you for your time.
Thank you very much. There's been some new names that have come down. Just remind them, the contributors, we're going to try to hear everybody who wants to be heard today. And we're keeping it to 3 minutes for testimony. The next, Lisa Hunter, and after Lisa would be the Welfare Rights Committee. Lisa Hunter here.
Good
Welcome to the committee.
Thank you.
Hi, thank you, Madam Chair and members. My name is Lisa Hunter, and I'm the Executive Director of the University Life Care Center. We're a pregnancy resource center in Dinkytown, right near the University of Minnesota campus. And first, I'd like to introduce Julie with a few words on the positive alternative.
Madam Chair, can I...
Welcome to the committee.
Thank you. Madam Chair, members of the committee, my name is Julie Nickham, and I'm with Minnesota Citizens Concern for Life. And we are here today to talk about one of the many important issues on this bill that you are working on, and that would be the aspect of positive alternatives. Positive alternatives, as you may or may not be aware, is organizations that has been a very bipartisan effort in differences of pro-life and pro-choice organizations. And we are here today to strongly support the re-implementing of those fund dollars back into the positive alternative programs.
Okay. Thank you. We are, as I mentioned, a pregnancy resource center near the University of Minnesota campus, and we have been a recipient of the positive alternatives grant during this first round, and we want to thank the committee, the legislature, for having a vision to fund this act in the first place to provide funding for those of us who provide alternatives for young women and couples. A few weeks ago, a young girl who's 17 came into me and was pregnant already about 4 months, and she explained that she first had her pregnancy test at what she called a family planning clinic, but she realized after talking with them, she said it wasn't a family planning, it was an abortion clinic. And although they could counsel her on different choices, since she decided to choose life for her child, they had no other resources to provide her. They basically sent her on her way. We, as pregnancy resource centers, are set up specifically to help women and couples who decide to choose life for their baby, to provide them from support from the second they come in for at least 2 years of their child's life with things. We were able to give this young woman even basic things like prenatal vitamins. She had had no prenatal care for the first several months. We were able to counsel her with regard to building a support network, whether it be her families or others. We, with our own private funding, can provide material assistance, financial assistance, housing search, equipment, and so on. Everything necessary once a woman does choose life for her child, again, for 2 years or as long as the young couple needs. Just yesterday, a homeless couple came who was 5 months pregnant and had no support. Again, we're set up specifically to help women and men in those situations, and we're able to help them with everything from housing assistance, their immediate need for maternity clothing, other support, food, and so on. The positive alternative grant is only not even 1 year old. We're only in the third quarter of it. It was started, as Julie mentioned, with wide bipartisan support. We're not traditionally publicly funded as pregnancy resource centers, like other family planning and sometimes abortion clinics are, so we really need the Positive Alternatives Act grant to really provide women the real options that that they often ask for as well. Thank you very much.
Thank you, Ms. Hunter. Appreciate
Thank
it.
You.
Next, the Welfare Rights Committee. Welcome to the committee.
Hi. I'm going to start. I'm Deb Knitschny. I'm a member of the Welfare Rights Committee and of the Minnesota Welfare Rights Coalition. This is Eliana. And we're just rushing here because we just found out about this hearing, but we are adamantly opposed to any of the TANF funds being refinanced for anything other than paying for the welfare program and getting the cash grants into the pockets of the poorest families in this state. This has been done numerous times over the past number of years. TANF has seen a loss of over $300 million in TANF funds that have gone to refinance other programs. Although we know these other programs are worthy and they're important, what that does is it gets the state off the hook so that they are not having to make a responsibility and pay for housing, for child care, for other things that are worthy programs for low-income families. And it instead replaces the general funds that should be spent on these important items with TANF funds that are supposed to be going directly to the poorest women and children in this state. Right now, TANF families are living on welfare grants that have not seen a cost of living increase in 21 years. That puts our families, when we're on welfare, at over 62% below the federal poverty level. As well, in 2003, there were numerous cuts that were passed of amounts of 15 to 50% more of a deduction in that monthly cash grant. We have, as a committee, been working, fighting to undo those cuts since 2003. We are working to try and get a cost of living increase for the poorest families. It's and any effort to take TANF as a surplus this year that could do all of those things. It can't give a cost of living that would get us up to where we're supposed to be, but it can be used to undo all the cuts. It can get the state in compliance with federal regulations, which could mean penalties down the line, and it could start to give a cost of living increase. Any money that is taken out of the TANF funds to refinance for other programs, therefore, is not going to be used for those very crucial things. So we are... You got a heart.
Yeah, and just about the refinancing, my name is Trish Bell with Welfare Rights Committee and Coalition. We're using the word refinancing because, you know, we want to be respectful to the committee and not use stealing, even though stealing is actually what it is, because you're stealing from poor people to give to other poor people. So the money needs to stay in TANF so you can undo the cuts, because the cuts affect everybody, everybody. And low-income people have seen so many cuts over the past year, and I just can't believe that our state is just gifting away money like this. We are completely opposed to this, and we would wish that you would take the Senate position.
So we would like to see the money not be taken out of TANF, and we would like to have see a different discussion that gives general fund dollars for these important programs. This year is crucial to undo cuts and to try and improve the situation for the poorest families. And so any money, as we said, going out of TANF is money that cannot be used to undo some of the wrongs that have been done over the past number of years. And we appreciate Representative Clark and all the work she's done on that as well over the years.
Yes.
So we understand the need for housing. We would like to undo homelessness as well, but it's not appropriate to steal from Peter to pay Paul, or take from one program for poor families to put into another program. The state should have a responsibility for housing.
Thank you for your time. Dr. Vincent Geary? Do we have any other people in the audience who wish to testify? We've been doing a good job of keeping to our 3 minutes, so we have extra time.
No.
But Dr. Geary, I'm going to still hold you to 3 minutes. Sorry.
What I do now?
Welcome to the committee.
Thank you.
Just introduce yourself to the tape, please.
I'm Dr. Vincent Geary. I'm Professor Emeritus in Laboratory Medicine and Pathology at the University of Minnesota. Former director of the Environmental Medicine and Pathology Group at the university. A fair amount of our work was in the area of epidemiology. We worked extensively with the National Cancer Institute in occupational environmental epidemiology, and we worked with people at the EPA as well. One of the things that was critical and is critical is the inclusion of occupational and environmental data on each individual who gets cancer. There seems to be a move afoot now to not include information about occupation in the people who have cancer in the cancer registry. I really don't understand that. It is like the keys to the kingdom of finding out an environmental occupational association. Otherwise, each time a question comes up, you have to go back and reinvent the wheel. You have to go back and say, all right, what did he do? How long did he do it? How did he do it? And is it associated? And you keep on having to do that. That costs a lot of money, millions of dollars. Inclusion of the occupational history in this context of the cancer surveillance system would kind of diminish that cost, really. Thank you.
Thank you very much. Next we have Jana Piglich. Thank you very much. Jana Piglich.
Thank you. I'm Jana Buglich with the Minneapolis Consortium of Community Developers, and I just wanted to thank you for supporting foreclosure prevention counseling and assistance through funding the Home Ownership Education Counseling and Training Program. As you know, the dramatic increase in foreclosures is having a devastating impact on families and communities across the state, and these resources will go a long way in helping families to make sound financial decisions, to ward off foreclosure, and to help folks at least experience a soft landing in cases where it's too late. So thank you very much.
Thank you, Ms. Miglich. Any other testimonies from the audience? I think that we have minutes before us that we should take care of today. Representative Benson, would you like to move those?
Madam Chair, I'd like to move the minutes for
our previous meeting.
For March 29th.
Okay. The minutes have been moved to be approved. Any discussion? If not, all those in favor signify by saying aye.
Aye.
Opposed, no. Motion prevails and the minutes are adopted. Well, members, we've come to the end of the public testimony, and so we are going to take a recess now, and we'll come back at 2 and wrap up the bill.
There was one.
There was there one more person
one
I missed?
Individual over there.
I'm sorry.
I
don't have a name of anyone. Is there another person who wished to testify?
Mr. Dahl, was it?
No, he spoke earlier.
He'd ask to come back, I think.
Okay, so members, we're going to be recessed until 2 o'clock. Thank you. Ready to order, please. Welcome back to the members. We have a new spreadsheet, and I want to ask Emily, our fiscal analyst, if she will just explain to us why we have a new spreadsheet. I think it's some technical changes, so I make sure we know.
Madam Chair, members, I'm sorry to do this to you, to have another spreadsheet. Does the chair sort of generously describe some of the accounting errors that were in there yesterday? Some of the changes are not, none of the changes in the numbers would be policy changes. The only ones, I'll bring your attention to a few. On line 15 on the page, first page, this is what the total amount should have been for the Housing Trust Fund, and all of the changes would, this change would be for the House recommendation for 2008-09. So that total changed to $27.1 million. And then also for the governor's recommendation, in 2008-09, if you look at page 2, on line 59, that number I originally had a little bit lower, and so the true total for the governor's recommendation is $114,376,000. And let me see. And then the other thing I want to point out is line 121 on page 3.
Okay.
This is just sort of a technical thing. The committee is carrying the compensation adjustments for policy, quality, and compliance, even though we don't have that in this committee. But where I had been carrying it was in the administrative support services section. So the numbers have always been there, but what I did was pulled it out and made it its own heading right there. So the totals should be pretty much the same for that. And I believe that's it.
Okay.
Sorry about the confusion.
Okay. The first thing we need to do is adopt the delete everything amendment numbers. And that is, the DE2 amendment. That's what we've been working off of last night, and so it puts the bill in the format that we want to work on it all the afternoon here today. So if there's any discussion on that.
Yeah, Madam Chair.
Representative Stevenson.
Thank you, Madam Chair. And since we're still working out the governor's bill here, before the delete everything amendment, I just wanted to speak briefly to the committee and to the chair. I know that you have put in a tremendous amount of energy in making some provisions for all of those who have come to the committee and testified before the committee, and there's some very compelling testimonies here on a lot of programs. I think one of the things we need to consider is that as we go down the road here, what are sustainable programs? What are the programs that we are going to invest our money in that are going to give us some results rather than just doing studies? I think the governor's working on programs that are currently established, funding those after the biennium. The other thing that I think the governor does that the DE2 amendment does not do, and that is put the TANF funds where they're most usable, puts $19 million on the base for $89 million overall, and then puts $25 million of one-time monies in for $114 on the biennium. With the current proposal in the DE2 amendment, we pump it up $5 million more than that in this biennium, but then we drop off to $82 million for housing on the out years. And as has been testified by numerous people here in the committee today, that we're building a house and then we're taking it right up to the edge of the cliff, and then we're going to say if we don't have the money here, the house is going to fall over the cliff. And that's my concern with the DE2 amendment and the things that are currently proposed here. So I would encourage us as a committee to take a hard look at it, and hopefully we could go with the governor's provision that is across the board with all the other departments has been figured out without raising taxes. And Madam Chair, I would request a roll call.
Okay. Then a roll call vote requested.
Madam Chair.
Representative Peterson.
Representative Peterson, so your motion then is to vote against the D2 amendment that would then leave the governor's program in place. Am I understanding you correctly?
Okay. Any discussion? Representative Schumper?
Madam Chair, being new to this committee, being new to the legislature, I have to say I've been somewhat puzzled by the whole discussion about the TANF allocations here, and perhaps you, being probably the most knowledgeable person, could explain to Representative Severson a little bit about why we allocated some of that TANF money the way we did.
Mm-hmm. Sure, I'd be happy to. Let me just first of all say that it's this governor who's led the way in using TANF funds for every which way kind of funding. He's done a lot of so-called refinancing from the very beginning of his administration, so the small amount that we're talking about in here is nothing compared to the millions, really, of refinancing that he's done and promoted and required us to work with. But what I would just say is, in this bill is, unfortunately, and I think the testimony from our witnesses was accurate today, and I respect that, and I think you're maybe hopefully supporting some of that too. It's incumbent upon all of us to make sure that we have long-term funding. This committee was given our $10 million in one-time funding, and the TANF funding, $7 million? Anyway, the TANF funding that we were given is on top of what the governor had already recommended. He already had $21 million in there. And that's what we have to work with, unfortunately. My hope is that as we go forward, we go into hopefully getting to the conference committee, there will be some readjustment of what our where kind of money we have to work with. I would certainly love to have much more general fund money, and I hope that the issues that are being raised in this committee would help bring that about. So I hope you can help us with that. So talking with the governor about that, now the money has to come from somewhere. And, you know, some of us have been willing to find some ways to bring in additional revenues. Unless we do that, with your cooperation, we're going to be left with the TANF funding. So, you know, I guess this is the first step, and we'll go down the road, and hopefully by the time we get to the Conference Committee, we'll have some other ways of looking at these dollars. We were very careful when we were trying to figure out where to allocate the TANF funding, that we only used it in programs that are actually serving MFIP recipients. We didn't say we want to in the housing NHFA, for example, we didn't put it towards any just TANF eligible programs. We put it towards programs that we got numbers that said these are the number of people who are on MPIP right now and who could benefit from this housing program. So we tried to do that as much as we could, and it's still not perfect, and like I say, this is the first step in a road that will hopefully bring us some different kind of dollars. And Mr. Trump, I don't know if you wanted to say more, but want me to say more, but I can just say that I think everybody in this committee is incumbent upon all of us to try to get some better dollars to work with. So I would urge members to vote against the amendment that's before us. Okay, the clerk will take the roll.
Clark?
Yes.
Anderson is... Benson?
Yes.
Eastland?
No.
Huntley is absent. Lane?
Yes.
Medora?
Yes.
McFarland? Not here. McNamara?
No.
Moe?
Yes.
Morgan?
Yes.
Peterson?
No.
Severson?
No.
Swales?
Yes.
Schumper?
Yes.
Vote being 8-4, the motion prevailed and the amendment is adopted. Now working off the delete everything amendment. We have an amendment that fixes the numbers in there. It's the A45 amendment. I believe that's what we need to get. Sorry. Let me take this one. This is the author's amendment to correct couple things. It corrects some of the technical errors that we found last night on the first page. Second page, it's new language for the cancer surveillance system that I requested that indicates that what we're dealing with is residential occupation, military history since childhood, and known possible exposures. Change I may need to make there. Right. Okay, most of this stuff is moved in different to be in the correct place in the department. Is that what you mean? Okay. I'm being told that the other technical changes here are to make sure that they're in the correct department that are what's being handled.
Here.
I'm sorry, I'm being told that the rest of the language here is to be moving into the correct places where into the correct departments that will be handling them. It's most of what the movement of the numbers is. Any discussion?
So, Madam Chair.
Representative Severson.
Thank you, Madam Chair. And so the numbers that we were working over on the DE2 amendment yesterday that were given to us as compared to the governor's numbers are still accurate. Is that correct?
They are, Representative Severson. I think we corrected them last night. We just need to have them in a written form so that it's reflected in the record.
Thank you, Madam Chair.
Any further discussion? If not, all those in favor signify by saying aye.
Aye.
Opposed, no. Motion prevails and that amendment is adopted. Okay. Well, we have... Okay. We'll start with the A3 amendment. Here we go.
Okay. Madam
Chair? Yes.
Just a question for information.
Yes.
Is it your intention that we are to complete our work at 5 o'clock today?
Thank you for asking, Representative Jensen. We have until 5 o'clock today, and so we are hopeful that we can move through these 40 amendments in this case and give the discussion that we need within the committee. And I do want to confine the discussion to the committee. I think we have the information we need. So we won't be taking testimony from the audience for any of these amendments.
Thank you, Madam Chair.
And if we're not done by 5 today, we will have to come back tomorrow, Saturday. So let's all hope we can get done today. All right. The first one here is the A3 amendment. Remember, this is a bill that we had in this committee, and it went through several other committees, and I'm bringing it back to you. This is the window fall prevention amendment. I can tell you that this amendment has the support of all of the stakeholders, including our two major window manufacturers here in the state of Minnesota. You don't have it?
What number are we?
It's in your folders. Yeah, it should be in your folders. Okay. There's no opposition to this, and I'm pleased to bring it back before you in this amended form. It will help protect children from falling through windows, and that's what we are accomplishing here. We're asking to look at the rules, giving the Commissioner of the Department of Labor the opportunity to work with some of the federal codes and create an educational safety program. Representative McNamara.
Thank you, Madam Chair. I just want to say thank you for working with the different groups. This is an issue that we need to work on. Thanks.
Thank you. Okay, any further discussion on the amendment? If not, all those in favor signify by saying aye.
Aye.
Aye. Opposed, no. The A3 amendment is adopted. We'll go to A9 next. Okay, this is an amendment that was brought to us actually by Representative Dabney, and it deals, and so I'll explain it very briefly. It basically is an effort to try to reduce mortgage foreclosures. I don't know if there's any particular questions on this. My understanding is this has been agreed to by all of the parties indicated on the page. Commissioners of Commerce, Attorney General, Mortgage Bankers, Legal Services, Minnesota Sheriff's Association, and what they're going to do is evaluate some statutes to see how we can help reduce mortgage foreclosures in the state. I think it's basically a non-controversial amendment as far as I know. So any discussion on this amendment? Who would like to move this amendment? Representative Swales would like to move the A9 amendment. Any further discussion? If not, all those in favor signify by saying aye.
Aye. Aye.
Opposed, no. Motion prevails. The A9 amendment is adopted. Next, we're going to go to the A12 amendment. This was Representative Lane's amendment. Maybe you'd like to move it or speak to it?
I would like to move the amendment.
Representative Lane moves the A12 amendment.
The money for the home visiting, a piece of it was left out of the amendment. This is technically, it's a technical amendment to put it back in.
Thank you. And it's reflected in the spreadsheet. Is there any discussion?
Thank you.
Representative Peterson.
But again, the way I'm reading it, the source is from TANF money?
Senator, all of the home visiting money is in TANF money.
Continuing.
We probably should have a roll call on that one, Madam Chair, if we could ask for that.
Roll call has been requested. Representative Lane?
Yeah.
I will just make the comment that in the governor's plan for home visiting, all of the money was from China.
Madam Chair, I could have objected to that, too.
Representative Okay. Any further discussion? If not, the clerk will take the roll.
Clerk?
Yes.
Anderson? Yes. Benson?
Yes.
Eastland?
No.
Huntley? Kranz?
Yes.
Lane?
Yes.
Medora?
Yes.
McFarland? McNamara?
Yes.
Moe?
Yes.
Morgan?
Yes.
Peterson?
No.
Severson?
No.
Swales?
Yes.
Chumper?
Yes.
The vote is 10 to 3 in favor of the amendment. The A12 amendment passes. Next, we'll take. The A23 amendment. Representative Peterson.
That is my amendment, 823. Okay. And I have some handouts. If the page could help me for a minute. I'd like to... Madam Chair, while my colleague is helping me pass these out, it's a letter from Associate Director of Cancer Research, University of Minnesota, who is in the first paragraph is outlining the very significant credentials and then expressing her concern about the involving of patients identified through cancer surveillance system regarding the potential causes of their cancer. Her opinion, the proposal is misguided on several fronts. It is scientifically unsound, is thus a waste of precious tax dollars. And then she again talks about her research. But it also violates the public's trust regarding cancer surveillance system and finds it very inappropriate for the government to contact and consult with individuals to an ill-advised study where it is mandatory to register their cancer. And Madam Chair, that was my concern when I heard the bill, that at a time when people are very, very vulnerable, and Madam Chair, I think many of us have been impacted by that, this kind of research is, as the doctor say, probably inappropriate, but is a violation of a family's concern at that time. So I'm offering this amendment, and I would ask that as part of the amendment that the funds appropriated under this amendment, this $948,000, be directed to the Bridges Rental Assistance Program, which will be found on page 66, subdivision 4 of the amended bill.
Okay. Any discussion? Representative Shumpert.
Chair, just to clarify, was it not made known to everyone in this committee that all amendments had to be in writing 24 hours before this meeting tonight? And I don't see the last part of Representative Peterson's amendment in this amendment.
Madam Chair.
Or am I misunderstanding his amendment?
Madam Chair, it's a point that my intention was to remove this piece. There is money appropriated to it, and I would ask you to consider my become part of my amendment that would direct those monies to another cause. That's what I'm trying to
do. The way you want to do that is to amend your amendment, but we don't have the new language that says that, Representative Peterson.
Madam Chair?
Yeah.
Perhaps
Representative Moe?
Danner?
Yeah.
Representative Moe? Just wait a second.
Thank you, Madam Chair. Representative Stevenson has a point, too, I'm sure. But I would agree with Representative Shumpert. I mean, we can vote on this amendment, but we, when we caucused amendments before, had made similar suggestions as to what to do with money in our amendments. And we abided by the rules that, no, we have the amendments before us. We're going to stick to that. And so I have no problem voting on this amendment. But then directing those resources, I don't think is, I think violates the agreement that we had.
Madam Chair.
Representative Stevenson.
And Madam Chair and members, I don't know that this necessarily has to be a part of the amendment. I think he is, Representative Peterson is merely stating an intention that if these funds are loose, if we are able to do away with this particular provision, those would be able to be directed at another fund. We are going to have an excess there. And, honestly, this is a debate that we're trying to put in and add programs and take away programs. I think there needs to be enough flexibility within. And to Representative Shumpert's point, we just had the bill at 5:30 last night. It's now 2:30. That's 22 hours ago. 24-hour doesn't work.
Yeah.
Thank you, Madam Chair.
Madam Chair.
Well, Representative Stevenson, I think we all had the bill when we came to the committee here before. So, but nevertheless, I agree. It is a fairly short amount of time for all of us. We didn't have it either, Representative Stevenson. We didn't have anything up on you. We got the bill at the same time. Representative McNamara.
Well, thank you, Madam Chair. I'm going to try and be very civil here and do this in an appropriate way. I want people to know that Emily Cleveland was here until 11 o'clock last night working on our amendments, which we left this room, folks, at 5:30 last night. This is a state employee that was here till 11 o'clock working on these amendments. We were given at 5:30 when we left the room to have our amendments here at 10. We busted the poor lady's tail and Miss Lefevre to get this work done. We walked up and said we have some more ideas this morning, and they said there's no way that we can possibly get this incorporated. So if you don't want us to explain what we want to do with people, when you gave us a bill at 5:30 at night, told us to be back at 10 o'clock this morning with our amendments, here's what I've generated, folks, just so you all know, since 5:30 last night, working our tail off to do what's right. And Representative Shumper, you can vote on it. It's to cut one program and add to another. But it's a cop-out to try to tell these folks that you want to cut off debate and not say a program you're willing to add to. That is not fair. This is just the beginning, folks. You can cut them all, and you can keep cutting us off. It was 24 hours, 5:30 last night. It's 2:29 exactly right now. This is not 24 hours, Madam Chair. This is 21 hours. The rules, you want to go by the rules? We got three more hours. We should recess and let us finish our work. This is a travesty to sit there and think that this is fair. Absolutely not. I am embarrassed to say I'm part of this process.
Madam Chair.
Representative Moore.
Thank you, Madam Chair. The motion, clarify the motion on the, for this bill is to go to pass and to go to finance, correct?
That's true, Representative Moore.
Madam Chair, is it, correct me if I'm wrong, but amendments are possible to this bill in finance committee and also on the floor, am I correct?
And also in the conference committee, Representative Moore.
Thank you, Madam Chair.
Representative Lane.
Well, back to the amendment. This amendment would delete the cancer surveillance pilot study, which is different, actually, than Dr. Ross was speaking to here. I did speak to Dr. Ross. The part that's on page 13 in our bill is slightly different. However, I, too, am concerned about the interviewing about possible exposures to toxic substance. And we'll be voting for this amendment.
And Madam Chair, I would request a roll call.
Representative Stevenson, request a roll call. Let me just explain a little bit about this. And Representative Peterson, we certainly can take your intention in mind, and I'm happy to look at that. And I do want to say to Representative McNamara, we took every amendment as it came way up until committee, so we didn't cut off anything that came to us this morning. What I want to say is I actually called Dr. Ross myself and had a conversation, a quite lengthy conversation. Very nice person. And I suggested to her what I would suggest to you, which is that she misunderstood the amendment, the proposal here. And the proposal is to collect some raw data that will be helpful to persons like her and others who are actually trying to do very comprehensive cancer research. What we're talking about is making sure that we have in the cancer registry some information that people who do the kinds of studies that she does and that others have done, and in fact that the University of Minnesota has been doing by going back to that registry and going to other registries, going back and interviewing people, that they will have this data in place. And one of the reasons that's important is, of course, that not every cancer survivor survives for very long. If we don't know anything about and don't have never collected data about where they may have worked or where they may have lived or if they've been in the military, any of those possible sites of exposure are missing and gone. So they're two different things, and I think that she might have been thinking that this was supposed to be a study. It's not. It's just providing data for future studies. And I can tell you one of the inconsistencies that I see in her concern is right now, when the university does their researches, they do go back to that existing cancer surveillance system, and they do contact people. And these are the people that are being talked with in this amendment. So they're being talked with at one point or another point. And there's nothing in this amendment right now that says it has to be done at any particular point in time. The original amendment, the original bill did say upon a diagnosis, it doesn't say that anymore. And so there's some judgment here, I think, about that the department can exercise in designing this. And, you know, I just hope it'll be very helpful for us in kind of understanding some of the sources of cancer in our community.
Madam Chair?
Anything? Oh, Representative Peterson?
And I understand what you're saying, but I also understand that this letter is just dated March 29, so even the author of that letter is under short notice, like all of us. But it is an opportunity for me, as a legislator, to suggest. I don't understand all of the research in health, but I do understand the needs in housing. And I do understand, in my suggestion, the Bridges Rental Program. And so this was an opportunity for me and to suggest to this committee that we need to make some choices, and we've got $1 million here. And so that's why I'm bringing forth this amendment.
I understand. Representative Shumper?
Madam Chair, I hope you'll clarify exactly what the amendment is, but I do want to respond to Representative McNamara's comments. It seems to me that if Representative Peterson had enough time to draft this amendment on paper, he could have also included the shift of funding on the paper as well. I also want to say that I actually emailed Dr. Ross yesterday in the morning, actually, when I got her email, and I assume everyone else did, and I raised the same concerns that Representative Clark did. I thought Ms. Ross was suffering some confusion about the cancer surveillance program. It is not hardcore scientific research of the type that she engages in. It's simply collecting broad demographic data, which used correctly could point to areas where hardcore scientific research could possibly be done in the future. I don't think her criticism of this approach is correct. I think she's just not clear about what the cancer surveillance proposal is about. It is not hardcore scientific research of the kind she engages in. And so, I hope everyone on this committee will not put too much weight into this letter and the emails that she sent out to everyone. I assume everyone got the same email that I did. So I'm going to be voting against the amendment.
Is that a no?
Madam Chair, just a quick, would you mind quickly reviewing the amendment and what a vote for and against the amendment would mean?
My understanding of the amendment is that it would delete lines 9 to 23. That has been amended now with the language that it was in the... It's in the A-45 amendment. So if you're confused, we suggested that we added that this morning. One of the first things to do is A-45 amendment. It would be, I presume, the amendment, and I'm going to certainly give you that leeway, Representative Peterson, that it would be amending the language. Maybe we can get from our staff.
I think it since it refers to the delete everything amendment, it would amend that document, so it would remove that section which has been previously amended.
It does incorporate this added amendment. Okay, thank you. So it's correct. It's actually just correct as it is then. Okay. Any further discussion? Representative Lane?
As I understand it, the authors, the A-45 amendment just simply changes it from an interview about possible exposures to toxic substances in an environment as well as residential, occupational, and military history. And it turns that around to residential, occupational, military history since childhood as well as an interview about possible exposures to toxic substances. It just reverses the order, but it's still the same thing. And I agree that the first part about residential, occupational, military history is objective data that could be collected. But the interview about possible exposures to toxic substances toxic substances in the environment is too subjective, especially at an emotional time, but too subjective as it is written or as it is intended. I would be willing to look towards this in the interim to
set this up in a way that would be a much more objective collection of such data, but in this way I can't support it as it's written here, so therefore I'm in favor of the amendment.
Any further discussion? If not, all those in favor of the... Oh, I'm sorry, it's roll call.
Clark?
No.
Anderson? Benson?
No.
Eastland?
Yes.
Huntley? Absent? Cram?
Yes.
Lane?
No. Yes to the amendment, right?
Fedor?
No.
McFarland is not here. McNamara?
Yes.
Mel?
No.
Morgan?
Yes.
Peterson?
Yes.
Severson?
Yes.
Swales?
Yes.
Shumper?
No.
The motion 8-5, the motion prevails, and the amendment is adopted. Next amendment.
Chair, just to clarify, that's only what's written on this piece of paper, correct?
That's right.
Okay.
Correct.
Right.
The 8-5 amendment is next.
Come back later. Money's not.
Yep. And who is the author of this amendment?
Madam Chair, the A5 was mine. I'd like to withdraw it. And I didn't know if you were going to do A6 okay. next. I was going to just...
Okay.
Was A6 next, Madam Chair?
Sure.
Okay. Madam Chair, I was withdrawing the A5. That actually... This deals with the atrazine issue. And what it does here is that the A... five amendment would have just deleted pollution control and inserted Department of Ag. And I didn't want to do that because I thought so many times throughout your bill, Madam Chair, you've referenced all three agencies, the Department of Health, the Pollution Control Agency, and the Department of Ag. And I'm assuming maybe in the haste of this only being in one committee, it might have been an accident, but the Department of Agriculture was not included in Representative Shumper's bill in an agricultural chemical of atrazine. And I wanted to make sure that the Department of Agriculture, which has been our department in the state of Minnesota that's dealt with this issue, would also be in cooperation with both the Health Department and the MPCA in dealing with this issue, Madam Chair. And I would ask that... members be aware of that. And the MDA is the agency that the state and federal authorities use for pesticides, for enforcement of pesticide regulation. And for us to shut the doors on the people that testified in committee from the Department of Ag that know so much about atrazine would be kind of like closing our eyes. We'd all be like poor Tory walking around here. And so I just think when we can have our eyes open, we shouldn't. Madam Chair, I'd ask for a roll call.
Call has been requested. Representative Shumper.
Thank you, Madam Chair. I'm glad you requested a roll call vote, Representative McNamara. As I testified on my other bill, it seems to me that two points I want to make here. The Department of Agriculture, I think, has an inherent conflict of interest because they are for advocating. Their primary role in this state is to advocate and promote agriculture, and so... when you have the problem of pesticides that might be widely used in agriculture also needing to be restrained and looked at with greater scientific scrutiny, it sets up this inherent tension. Secondly, I don't think that the Department of Agriculture can contribute anything to setting the health risk limits and the maximum containment levels in public waters. I think that solely has to do with the kind of activities that are carried out in the Department of Health and the Pollution Control Agency. And so I would ask for a no vote on this amendment.
Any further discussion? If not, the amendment is before us. All those in favor signify. Oh, I'm sorry, roll call. I'm so sorry. Roll call.
Clark?
No.
Benson?
No.
Eastland?
Yes.
Kranz?
No.
Lane?
No.
Medora?
No.
McNamara?
Yes.
Mo?
No.
Morgan?
No.
Peterson?
Yes.
Severson?
Yes.
Swales? Oh, no. Shumpert?
No.
Those four yes, eight no, the motion does not prevail. And it's not adopted. This was the A27 amendment. I'll move this amendment, the A27 amendment, and discuss it. This amendment, we heard testimony earlier today that the tribal communities at Prairie Island would like to be added to the study that is being done on radiation around the nuclear power plant in their community. And the way this amendment is constructed, it adds no additional dollars. It just says within the limits of available appropriations. And my understanding is that, in talking with the health department, that this would move the date out, and so there'd be. I guess we move the date back as well. So that's basically it, members. The existing language is in the bill, and this modifies that.
Madam Chair.
Representative McNamara.
Thank you. Thank you, Madam Chair. If I remember right, is this a $25,000 study, I think, that's been allocated for Department of Health? And, Madam Chair, just to clarify again, what does this study do? I'm trying to remember.
I believe it's a $51,000 study. It's around $50,000. What this says is that the Department of Health, in cooperation with the utility that owns the facility, which I believe is Excel, they're going to put a report together for the communities that are around that area so they can understand what the impact of the health impact of possible of radiation emissions are on those affected communities. And then they'll report that to us, come back and report that to us. So that we can look both at any public health or emergency response planning issues. Any further discussion? Not. All those in favor signify by saying aye.
Aye. Aye.
Opposed, no. Motion prevails and the amendment is adopted. The A18 amendment is before us. And who would like to claim that amendment?
Madam Chair, if you would lay that one over.
Okay, 18 is laid over. Next amendment. The A19 amendment.
And lay that one over as well, ma'am. Madam Chair.
Lay that one over. Okay.
That's right.
The A20 amendment will be our next amendment.
That one. A20, Madam Chair?
Yes. A20 amendment? Who claims the A20 amendment? Representative McNamara.
Well, Madam Chair, I just got to say between your soft voice and my hard 3 years of contracting, I don't get it very well, so I apologize when I keep asking you to repeat. The A20 is my amendment, and Madam Chair, like Representative Peterson, I have a small oral addition to the bottom of the amendment that I would like to add that we put this money to the pandemic flu on page 11, line 3. And I would ask if council has that and if they need any clarification.
President McNamara, What I'm going to do, because that is not in writing, and that was the rule that we all have had to live with, including the DFL side, I'm going to say that when we have an amendment like this, unless you're, are you moving to amend your amendment with the, no, you don't have language, it's language that you didn't bring to us, that if there's no objection, we will consider the amendment. So,
Madam Chair?
The amendment to the amendment is what I'm going to say.
To this point, Madam Chair? I want the audience to be able to know the amendment that you offered, the A45 amendment, that when we came back after lunch, folks, there's numbers on here, $242,485, insert, delete, insert. There's in the tens of millions, 3, 6, 9, 12, 18, 21, 24, 32, 36, 40, 44 times, folks, tens of millions of dollars on this amendment are listed. We accepted this amendment on the chair's word that it was technical. Then there's a whole thing here on cancer surveillance. Madam Chair, we believed you when you said, I have offered an amendment that I believe is about 8 words that I went up and met with Ms. Cleveland and Ms. Lefevre at about 11:30 this morning and asked them if they could draft these changes. And she asked, could you please just offer them orally? They're very simple. Now, if you want to tell me that you want to ask all the members of this committee whether I should be able to offer an 8-word oral amendment, I just want everybody to know what we're doing here. We want to say that you delayed the committee for hours on end, but then when we tried to accommodate staff that have been there till 11 at night, and I want to add, oh, maybe 8 words if Ms. Lefevre gets a chance, if I get done talking, to add what I want to add. And you want to ask all the committee members whether any one of them might not want to take a vote to let atrazine, pandemic flu, have money instead of atrazine?
Mr. McNamara, did you, when you took the amendment up originally, did you not think to make the full amendment that you wanted to have?
Thank you, Madam Chair, for that question. That's a very fair question. Actually, I thought I had an understanding. I do not want to humiliate any partisan staff, any nonpartisan staff, because at 8 o'clock, 10 o'clock, 11 o'clock last night, or 11:30 this morning, they may have not understood. I'm asking for some flexibility for a few words to be added. Madam Chair, this A45 amendment that we accepted, we accept it on good faith. I understand folks may have differences here, but not allow us to present an oral amendment with a few more, an amendment with a few words added to it. That's fine. I just want people to know what we're doing here. We'll get another chance, Madam Chair.
Right.
If we just want to do it, we can go right now. We can just rule them all out of order. We don't have to have the votes here. We can let the Finance Committee and let them be on the floor. I just think the people served on this committee, they deserve to take votes, Madam Chair.
Representative McNamara, I think we've been very open with you throughout. We've given you all the rules. We're all living by the same rules. And we extended the rules this morning. We extended the time. We took every amendment that came in late so that the staff who had worked so hard could get them to us. I'm sorry that you didn't complete your amendment last night. I think it's fair to do the process of asking individuals if we're I'm not determining it. We're going to see if there's any objections on the committee here. If there are no objections, to having Representative McNamara make an oral amendment to his amendment, and you can consider it. Representative Moore.
Thank you, Madam Chair. At risking endangering my relationship with Representative McNamara, I'm going to object. I think your author's amendment was information that we were all presented with yesterday. There's no surprises there. Taking money out of one portion of the budget and putting it into another is a significant change, and I would object, and I would ask that we just vote on the amendment as it is.
Madam Chair. Obviously we're getting into a crunch here, and obviously there are issues that I think have been overwhelming the staff. Our intent on this is to say, if we're going to take a portion out here, this is where we would hope that monies would be targeted, and we can offer those in amendments. If they're not going to be offered as an amendment because of the process that we're going through, then it's fair for us to say, as authors of the amendments, to the audience
that in fact this is our intent. If we're going to loose up these funds, there's a better place we can do that. And that's where we're coming from in the minority party. And there's been a misnomer in this committee probably since we've come into the last couple of weeks that yesterday when this bill was passed, or when this bill was brought before us, all of these items were passed in committee. That's a misnomer.
No, that wasn't.
Because I think we voted on maybe three or four bills in this committee. Everything else was laid over. This is our first opportunity to vote on a great number of these bills. And that is why we in the committee and you in the audience will see roll calls on most of these so people know where we're standing on these issues. Thank you, Madam Chair.
Thank you, Representative Stevenson. And we're certainly willing to have people's intentions, and there's going to be another opportunity. Three more opportunities for amending any of these, this entire bill. Representative Shumper.
Thank you, Madam Chair. In that regard, I do want to request a roll call vote on this particular amendment. I've noticed with great curiosity the interest in this small little water level standard for atrazine bill that I introduced, and I think it'll be well for the public to know whether people are committed to dealing with the problem of endocrine disrupting pesticides in this society, or whether they're interested in ignoring that well documented scientific problem. And so, I'm sorry if the minority members here feel badly about this, but, we've allocated certain amounts of money here. We did have chances to amend bills in committee even before they were laid over. So, I'm supporting Representative Moe's request that we not allow the amendment, the verbal amendment.
Okay. So the amendment is before us.
Madam Chair.
And we have a... Go ahead, Representative Eastland.
Thank you, Madam Chair. I think I'd just like to speak to the process here a little bit as well. I've never, in my 7 years that I've been here, been told that an author does not have the right to amend their amendment or their bill. I've never experienced that ever in any committee that I've ever brought an amendment or a bill to. That's number one. The second thing is, Representative Shumper, I don't know where you're drawing your experience from, but I serve on a number of committees that look at omnibus bills, and many, many things appear in omnibus bills that were never heard in a committee that came from another committee. That maybe are just, it's an interest from the author that it's something they wanted to put in. And that's what this hearing is about, to look at the omnibus bills and have an opportunity to question those things and to discuss those things that were not fully vetted in a committee. And quite frankly, we have not voted on any of these things in committee. And so I think part of the process here is, do we want this to be an open process that at least on the surface can look bipartisan, or do we want it just to be shutting the door and saying we're not interested in your ideas? Because that's really the message that we're getting here. If you don't want to hear our ideas, that's fine. But then I guess our election certificates don't mean anything. And so if you want to rule us out of order in a way, Madam Chair, that I've never seen happen in any committee I've ever been on, I just think that's an interesting phenomenon.
Well, Representative Eastland, we're not ruling you out of order. We are trying to follow the rules that we set. And, I think, actually, I'd like to call a recess. I want to have a moment to talk about this with some of my colleagues. I want to make sure we're all on the same page. So we're recessed for 10 minutes. Okay, committee members, we'll come back to order. Well, we've had a little chance to talk with staff and determine if there was a problem with members being told that they needed to offer more oral amendments. And although that came today after the deadline, from what I can tell, it didn't happen last night before the deadline. It came after the deadline in the request from the Republican members. We're going to give you the opportunity to present your amendment to the amendment. As an amendment to the amendment, we'll do that. And if that was the case, if you're telling us that in that case this is a situation where you were told that there was not time to do something even though it was after the deadline, so we're kind of bending over very far to give you the opportunity, I think, here. And I would ask you to be honest with us about that, not mislead any of us here. All of us, that's all sides, we all have that rule for ourselves, I think. And I think if there are small, you know, if there are small minor amendments, we'll do that in that case too. We'll do amendments to the amendments and consider them. And we will be done at 5, and if we need to, we'll come back tomorrow. Okay? Representative Schumper.
Madam Chair, did you clarify, did the staff, some staff people mislead Representative McNamara about the oral amendments?
Oh, Representative Schumper, there was no misleading. I wouldn't characterize it that way.
Okay, I won't either then.
Okay, no. what happened is that Republican members went up today after the deadline and asked to have amendments to redirect funding. This is my understanding. And we're told it's after the deadline. If you wanted to do it, maybe you should do it as an oral amendment. And since that was the instruction, but we are going to give the leeway here. I don't want to put our staff in a bad position. I do want to note that Republican members went after the deadline to do something that they could have done before the deadline. Staff were here. So we shouldn't be blaming the staff for not having enough time. These amendments were brought to them after the deadline. And I think we should be very clear about that.
Thank you, Madam Chair, for clarifying that.
Okay, so Representative McNamara, your amendment is before us. Do you wish to amend your amendment? Representative, I think it's A20, is that correct?
Thank you, Madam Chair. I think actually to clarify, I want to incorporate some words into my amendment. The incorporation would be it would be on page 11, line 13, delete $4,088,000 and insert $9,769,000. And I'll repeat it, Madam Chair. On page 11, line 13, delete $4,088,000 and insert Excuse me, Madam Chair, would it be all right if Ms. LaFever read it? I'm reading her writing, and possibly I'm not. I thought I was reading it right. I could give her a note back.
Do you have a chance to get that, Ms. LaFever?
Yes, Madam Chair, members, it would be page 11, line 13. Delete the dollar value, $4,088,000, and you would insert $9,769,000, which is the $4,088,000 plus the 2 years amounts that are being moved from the other program. So the amounts that are being deleted on page 12.
From line 15.
It's line 14. Okay. I'm sorry. I'm. Give me 1 second. Okay.
Representative Moe.
Thank you, Madam Chair. Just quite a bit of information then. So it's been called an insertion or an amendment. I'm assuming we're handling this as an oral amendment to the amendment, correct?
This is an amendment to the amendment that we will
vote on the amendment to the amendment.
We'll do that in any instance that our members want us to do that. Representative Moe.
Thank you, Madam Chair. Clarification, Representative. You're deleting some parts of the program, and are you changing the money from that deletion to FLU, or are you taking money from I don't know where to FLU? Because I only see $200,000 in your delete part.
Thank you, Madam Chair. It was not my intention to amend the amendment. it was my intention to incorporate where the money would be going. If I'm not mistaken, Madam Chair, we're already on an amendment, and it would be out of order to amend an amendment.
No,
to
it's
an
not
amendment.
Out of order to amend an amendment.
I thought we're on an amendment, Madam Chair. Yours was a delete all amendment.
We're on the bill now that it has been amended.
Okay.
Now we're on the bill. We're not on an amendment to the amendment. We're on your amendment is an amendment to the amendment, which is allowed. That's clear. You're going to have your opportunity to amend anything here that we believe can is coming from the problem that we talked about.
Okay. So, Madam Chair, would it be right that for those freshman members that maybe are new, oftentimes a person will be presenting a bill or offer an amendment, and they'll say, to get the amendment in the shape I want to make it, I would like to offer this oral amendment. And then I would like to discuss the amendment after I've got it in the shape I want it. And oftentimes, I don't know if I've ever heard you're saying, we don't want to let you get it in the shape you want to offer your amendment. We want to stop you and vote on the part you want to do. So this would be different than custom and usage around here of allowing an author to get the amendment in the shape they want. Would that be the new rules that we're going by today in this committee, Madam Chair?
Representative McNamara, that's a little tricky, but you've been here long enough to know that we have amendments to the amendment all the time, and that there's nothing unusual about that at all.
Okay, but Madam Chair, would I be true? So the freshmen know what I'm doing is what they've heard already in committee for the last 2 months, where an author will say, I want to get it in the shape I want to get it, and here's my oral amendment, and then we vote on it. Actually, I don't have a problem, but I would imagine what you want to do is then you're going to ask somebody to divide the amendment, and you're going to ask to vote on, you're going to rule the point out of order. You know, if you want to hide the process, Madam Chair, that's okay. If you want to not let people know this is to delete atrazine and add pandemic flu, and you don't want to let the people vote on that, I guess just let everybody know that's what we're doing here.
You know what, Representative McNamara, your assumption is entirely wrong. We are going to give you an opportunity to vote on the amendment to the amendment. We're going to vote on the amendment, and then we'll see where it goes from there. So please don't make assumptions. And I guess the only other thing I'd say is that when we put bills in the shape the author wants, that's often when it's first introduced. When we get into markup, we have amendments to amendments. We have a very clear process to follow, and we're going to be very careful about that today. So the amendment is before us, Representative Shumper? The amendment to the amendment, excuse me.
It's not clear to me exactly what the oral amendment is.
Okay, let's ask us a favor to clarify that.
Madam Chairman, members, I'm sorry, I was looking at a different page. The amendment to this amendment should be on page 11, line 3, delete $4,088,000 and insert $4,288,000, which is moving the money from the atrazine to the pandemic influenza preparedness section.
Is there any further discussion? Representative McNamara, do you feel like you've had a chance to explain your amendments to the amendment?
Thank you, Madam Chair. No, that would be fine.
Okay. Any further discussion? Representative Shumper on the amendment to the amendment.
Thank you, Madam Chair. Representative McNamara, I'm sure it's no surprise to you that I'm going to vote against your amendment. Had I been able to persuade people, you wouldn't have a chance, or any of us wouldn't have a chance to vote on your amendment, because I think that you could have included that oral amendment in your written amendment. Secondly, I hope people recognize that spending this money on studying atrazine from a scientific standpoint and dropping that public exposure level to one part per billion is going to do a tremendous amount to protect children and infants and fetuses in this state, and that's going to have as much impact as putting a little bit more money into the pandemic influenza preparedness. And so I strongly urge my colleagues to vote against this amendment.
Okay, there's McNamara.
Well, I just want to clarify, seeing how we're voting on the amendment to the amendment. The amendment is to add $200,000 to pandemic flu is what it is. That's the amendment that we're voting on right now.
That's right. Okay. Any further discussion on amendments to the amendment? If not, it's before us. All those in favor signify by saying aye.
Aye.
Opposed, no?
No.
Amendment is is not adopted.
Division.
Division has been called for. All those in favor, please raise your hands. And the amendment to the amendment. All those opposed, please raise your hands. Voted 8-4, the amendment is not adopted. Amendment to the amendment. Now we're on the amendment, Representative McNamara. The A-20 amendment.
Madam Chair, what the amendment is, and for members, it's to delete the atrazine program, as Representative Shumper has talked about. And my whole basis for this is, members, it's important for you to know this has never been to the Ag Committee. It's an agricultural chemical that we have a number of employees in the Ag Department that work on our pesticide agricultural chemicals. And I want all of you to know what you're voting on is to not let Chair Junkie's committee see this bill so the agricultural community can weigh in, the environmental community can weigh in. You want to squash the process and vote to not send this to the correct committee. You want to hide this in an omnibus bill where it won't get the proper talk in the committee that it's about. This is an agricultural chemical, one of the most widely spread, one of the most controversial ones, and absolutely deserves to be discussed there. It's used in a number of new ways. It's incorporated with other chemicals and used at lower doses today than it used to be. As you heard, there's been 6,000 studies. The EPA just got done recertifying or whatever they called it. And what we want to do is we want to squash that process and send it not to the Ag Committee, but hide it in an omnibus bill. And I just think that's really unfortunate, Madam Chair. And I ask for a roll call so that everybody's on the record to know that they don't want the Ag Committee to see this. They want to hide this in an omnibus health bill, and that they've also voted to not let the Ag Department be involved in this process.
I think Representative Shumpert also already requested a roll call, if I'm not mistaken. So it's already requested. Representative Shumpert?
Well, you know, I guess I want to speak to Representative McNamara's rhetoric here. When Senator Marty and I introduced these bills, we had a press conference. We got a pretty good press conference. We're not hiding the atrazine bills from any place, certainly not from Representative Junkie's committee. We introduced 4 atrazine bills, 3 of which are going to be going to Representative Junkie's committee, one of which already went through this committee and is already going in that direction. So we're not trying to hide anything from anybody, Representative McNamara. And secondly, it seems to me much of your argument speaks to why we shouldn't send it to the Ag Committee and the people in agribusiness and the people like Syngenta that are working to continue the use of atrazine in this state and in this country. This is a public health issue. The Ag Department has had, since the Clean Water Act or the Groundwater Act of 1989, almost 20 years to take an adequate look at atrazine. In my opinion, they haven't. They don't do enough groundwater monitoring, enough pesticide monitoring. They've kind of ignored the Groundwater Protection Act of 1989 in regards to a chemical like atrazine. And so it's time to start a new chart, a new course here, Representative McNamara. And I think we're going to get that under the Department of Health by requiring them to look at current scientific evidence, current scientific research as it relates to endocrine disrupting pesticides, of which atrazine is the most well known to date. So I think we're doing absolutely the right thing, and I hope we get it through the legislature, and I hope the governor stands up for his pro-life views and signs it, because it'll be the most pro-life piece of legislation in the last 20 years in this state, Representative McNamara.
Any further discussion? Representative McNamara.
Thank you, Madam Chair. And Representative Shumper, I think I absolutely agree with you. I will remove my amendment, because you said you don't want to hide this from anybody. All you need to do is ask the chair now that you will refer your bill to Representative Junkie's committee out in the open. Like you said, you just said you don't want to hide it from anybody, and as long as you're letting it go to Representative Junkie's committee and have a fair hearing with all the environmental groups and whoever else wants to come, speak on it. What are we afraid what they might find in the open committee process? I don't understand. You said you don't want to hide it from anybody. I agree. Let's send it to Representative Junkie's committee. I'll absolutely remove my amendment right now, as long as you tell me you'll send it to Junkies Committee.
Okay, Representative McNamara, I think you made your point. Any further discussion from anybody else? If not, the A20 amendment is before us. There's a roll call vote. The clerk will take the roll.
Clerk?
No.
Anderson? Not here. Benson?
No.
Eastland?
Yes.
Huntley is not here. Crane?
No.
Lane?
No.
Medora? Yes, not here. McFarland is not here. McNamara?
Yes.
No?
No.
Morgan?
No.
Peterson?
Yes.
Severson?
Yes.
Seth?
No.
Shumper?
No.
The amendment fails 8-4 and is not adopted. Next amendment before us. 8-15.
Madam Chair, 8-15 is my amendment.
8-13, Representative. 8-13.
No.
Not sure whose it is. Who wants to claim it?
8-13, Madam Chair. 8-13. I guess in an effort. Thank you, Madam Chair. In an effort to expedite the process here a little bit, and I don't want to withdraw it, but I would like to amend or put my two amendments together. If that will work, this kind of demonstrates the process that we tried to use, places we can find money and places to other things that we wanted to do. But what I'd like to do is I'd like to pair this amendment with the A-22 amendment.
You can move.
Pardon me, not the A-22, the A-16 amendment.
Proper motion, I believe, would be just to amend your amendment with the A-20.
Yeah, and this, Madam Chair, I'm still really struggling with this because in my experience, the author has always been able to say, I would just like to amend this, and the Chair says, okay, you can incorporate that in there. The amendment is before us. Let's go. I'm having a little difficulty with the process here, which is the first time for me. So
interesting, because I've been in here quite a bit longer than you, and amending amendments is a pretty common thing in markups. I'm just...
And it's usually an incorporation. I'd like to incorporate my the A-16 into the A-13, Madam Chair.
Good try. We're going to vote to amend your amendment. We'll honor that. Let's see, which one is that line? Okay. The A. Just one more time, please.
It's the A-13 amendment, and I guess I'd like to incorporate the A-16 amendment into the A-13 amendment.
I'm going to move to. Well, we can either take them separately, we can move them. I don't think you're going to have an opposition on this, but to do this properly, we should be amending the amendment with the other amendment. If you choose to do it that way,
well, I guess the process we've always used is to incorporate any changes that we'd like to bring into our amendments, and I'm just asking to have the A-16 incorporated into the A-13 amendment.
I told you the proper motion. Would you prefer not to do it that way? Do you want to make it, you don't want to, we're not going to incorporate anything tonight. We're going to be amending amendments with language. If you want to do it that way, that's fine. If not, we can have two separate amendments. They're both yours. You're welcome. They're on the table.
They are, Madam Chair, but one will get ruled out of order then because it costs money, and there's no place to take the money from.
We are not ruling any of yours out of order. I think you're, again, making some assumptions. Why don't you take one amendment at a time then if you're worried about that?
Madam Chair, it would be out of order to offer an amendment to spend money that we don't have in the bill. And one of my amendments would spend money we don't have in the bill. And my other amendment is the amendment that generates that money. And so I guess that's why these two are being paired together. I'd like to incorporate them together.
The proper motion is to amend the amendment with the other one. And if you would like to do that, I'd be happy to entertain it. Do you want to move that or do you want me to move it?
Madam Chair, if you would move it, I would be happy. But my understanding is...
I will move that the A-13 amendment be amended with the... What is the other amendment?
A-16.
A-16 amendment.
Madam Chair, I'll ask for a roll call.
Representative Shumper.
Madam Chair, could you clarify, are we voting on the amended?
We're voting on the motion to amend one amendment to another. We're voting on the motion to amend A-13 to the A-16 amendment, I believe. Is that correct? Is it Representative Eastland, which is your base amendment?
Excuse me.
Is your, are we amending the A13 amendment to the A16 or the other way around?
Well, it could be either way. It'll end up as the same thing, so.
Which do
you prefer? The amendment we were on, I think was on the floor was A13, I believe, was what was up. So.
I am moving that we amend the A13 amendment with the A16 amendment. Representative Shumper.
So, Madam Chair, just to clarify, we're adding the A16 to the A13, correct?
That's correct.
Okay, so we're voting on that addition, that amendment, and so if it fails, the A16 is voted down.
No, the A16 amendment is still on the table.
It can be still introduced on its own.
Okay. That's the motion, and I believe there's a roll call.
Madam Chair, is someone going to explain what the two amendments are?
I thought,
okay, Madam Chair,
I thought Representative Eastland just did.
No, I didn't really explain the amendments. We're just talking about the process. The A13 amendment, members, is an amendment that takes out the language of the lead abatement language, which moves the limit from 15 micrograms down to 10. And it also deletes the funding that is going to ClearCorps. It's my understanding that ClearCorps was funded in the environmental bill, or the energy bill, and there's other language in the in this bill. I believe it's on page 62, section 24. If you want to flip over to it, there is a study that is funded in this bill, directed in this bill, to look at the issue of lowering the lead limit from 15 down to 10. I guess in speaking with the department, it would be good to look at the what that entails and the evidence, and come back with a report from them to us to make that decision and find out what it's going to mean. There's still a significant way to go to get to the 15 milligram level, and so I think the revenue that we have can continue to go to that level, and within a year we can have information back here to talk about what it's going to take to get down to the 10, and then we can take action on that and move on. But that's the first part of the A13, and then the A16 basically is to restore funding to the positive alternative grants that was taken out in this bill. And so basically, I think there's about a $3 million savings in the lead abatement, and we're going to take that money and put it into the positive alternatives grants.
Any discussion?
Madam Chair, I speak in favor of the amendment. I think it's a strong program. Drawing a mental blank now. Where are we amending it to?
Positive
alternatives. It has been a tremendous program in the past. We're defunding it below what the governor's recommendations by 1.5, and this would bring back the dollars that they are doing great work with. And I think this is, in terms of the lead abatement process that we've been going into, if we do a study and we find that there's not that much cost in going from 15 down to 10, that's something we can deal with in the next budget. But I think this is a great move, and it's a fiscally good swap. I would speak in favor of the amendment.
Could I make one more comment, Minister?
Representative Eastland.
Yeah, and just as far as the thinking, why this match is, I think initially there was thought that money could come from the family planning grants and be put into the positive alternative grants. But when we began to hear from people, there was a lot of grantees in the state of Minnesota who are working in the positive alternative area, who work with many of the family planning clinics, and we were hearing from both sides that they did not want to see them pitted against each other in this process. So that's why we're taking some effort to try to fund this in a way that doesn't hurt the family planning dollars as well.
Any further discussion? If not, is this a roll call? Did you ask for this or no?
Clerk, okay. Yeah.
Roll call. Okay.
Clerk?
Okay. No. Yes.
Benson?
Yes.
Madam Chair, I don't know if it's proper to ask a question during roll call, but I'm not sure if everybody understands what they're voting on. I think the motion is to put these two bills together, so if that's what we're voting on.
Yes.
Thank you.
Yes.
Sorry. Eastland.
Yes.
Cram.
Yes.
Lane.
Yes.
Medora. He's not here. McNamara.
Yes.
Mo.
Yes.
Morgan.
Yes.
Peterson.
Yes.
Severson?
Yes.
Grell?
Yes.
Shumper?
No.
The motion prevails 11 to 1. Now we have before us the combined amendments, A13 and A16.
Sure.
Representative Eastland,
I think I've explained that how the two fit together, and I appreciate your patience with the process here, but I would just ask that we look at this as something that we're not saying we don't appreciate the issues with lead. We're just letting the process work and take some time so we know our action is a little more appropriately directed. I just request a roll call vote. Thanks.
Roll call vote has been requested. Any discussion? Representative Shumper.
Yes, Madam Chair. Clarify, isn't there some unique activities that ClearCorps is going to be doing under this funding that isn't being done in some of the other funding proposals that Representative Eastland mentioned, I believe?
Yes. Representative Shumper, and I believe the part that's being deleted here is the lead program that moves the number down to 10 from 15. And so basically what we would be doing would be allowing children to be poisoned at the rate of 15 parts per deciliter as compared to 10. And so this is allowing more lead poisoning to happen before there is intervention or even assessment done. ClearCorps' work here is to help deal with some of the cleanup and do it at a very, very inexpensive rate. And I believe the amendment also dealt with the part on page... deals with the part that where they're going to conduct a pilot to look at lead hazards in pre-78 rental property, which was part of the agreement that we reached when talking with the various organizations that decided to support, that you heard support from the landlords associations, the health, some of the local health departments, and so on. So,
thank you, Madam.
I hope that explains it. And the bill is before us, the amendment is before us. Any discussion? Okay, we are going to have a roll call vote on this. Take the roll, please.
Clark?
No.
Benson?
No.
Eastland?
Yes.
Kranz?
No.
Wayne?
Oh.
Medora?
No.
McNamara?
Yes.
Mo?
No.
Morgan?
No.
Peterson?
Yes.
Severson?
Yes.
Will?
Yes.
Shumper?
No.
Vote is 8 to 5. The motion prevails and is not adopted. It did not prevail. Did I say prevail? Oh, I misspoke. I'm sorry. That I said it did not prevail. Okay, now the amendment is the A44 amendment. Looking for the amendment here.
Who claims that amendment? This is my amendment. I need to see it.
Madam Chair, Chair 1?
It's 44, but I do not have it here, and I'm wondering if someone would loan me their 44. Okay.
Madam Chair, I believe it was a late handout.
Yes, it is, Glenn. This, members, is a language that changes the lead, Child Lead Poisoning Act, and it's requested from the health department, and in talking it over with the advocates, they agreed that we will delete the filter paper test and do some work to next year with that study and come back. So the deletions that you see there are referred to that program. And I have to say, I think this is an attempt to reach some compromise, and I'm supporting it, of course. So I would ask you for your support. Any discussion on the amendments?
And Madam Chair,
Representative McNamara, and then Representative Severson.
Madam Chair, I didn't hear who was offering the amendment.
I am.
Okay. Madam Chair, I just wanted to clarify that this amendment was printed at 12:18 this afternoon, approximately an hour or so after I was up in the nonpartisan staff office to clarify about printing an amendment that we have been going through to divide amendments and make votes. And I want it on the record so everybody knows this was printed at 12:18, was put in our packet when we walked back in the room at 2 o'clock. Folks need to know the process we're going through here.
Representative Lane?
I'll just say that as I look through this amendment, it basically pretty well deletes, takes 18, 19, 20, 21 back to the original, except to change to 10 micro whatevers instead of 15. Other than that, it's back to the original language.
Any further discussion?
And Madam Chair.
Representative Severson.
Yeah, Madam Chair, I do have a note here. I think that there's clarification on this amendment as well. And if I could submit this. So page 26, line 7, reinstate the stricken language. I think this clarifies the amendment a little more, Madam Chair. Reinstate the stricken language on line 7, line 11, line 15, line 19, line 22, and line 36.
Let me see, Stephen, which line on the amendment are you referring to? Have you got the A44 amendment in front of you?
Is it the A44? That's the wrong one there.
Okay.
Yes, Madam Chair, I just had the a note brought in that basically, in order for it to be in the full context of the amendment, that on page 26, line 7, on the A44 amendment, and I just again, and I haven't had a chance to look at it, line 7. To, in other words, Madam Chair, to clarify it, going from the Lithmus to the Venus, in line 26-7, replace the stricken language Venus there, in line 26, line 11, Venus there.
Representative Susan, I don't understand. Are you offering an amendment to the amendment?
Yes, Madam Chair.
Okay. You have language?
Yes, Madam Chair.
And it looks like about a half a page of language. Representative Lane?
I see what's happening here. I said that it had gone basically back to original language, and we actually, if that's the case, we actually did forget on line 26-7, for instance, where Venus has been crossed out. To revert to the original language, you would have to put Venus back in, and that reoccurs, as he's mentioned, down several lines, so he's only making a small change to revert to the original language on 26.7, 26.11, 26.15, 26.19, 26.22. It's the same word that repeats.
Right.
And I believe if you wanted to go back to the original language, this would be a friendly amendment. Now you'll have to examine that.
Yeah, I don't have a chance. Representative, I mean, Ms. LaFavor.
Madam Chairman, I think you just add a line to the amendment on page 26, lines 7, 11, 15, 19, and 22. Reinstate the stricken language.
And 36.
Page 7, 11, 9, 22, and 36. Page 26, line 7, 11, 19, 22, and 36. I'd like to get that.
Chairman.
If I may, Madam Chair, line 7, line 11, line 15, line 19, line 22, and line 36. Reinstate the stricken language. Basically, that's reinstating the Venus.
Madam Chairman, Mr. Baylor, Ms. Cleveland just pointed out to me that there is other stricken language, so we should say, to be clear, reinstate the stricken Venus, so we don't reinstate the stricken numbers.
Thank you.
Reinstate the stricken what?
Venus.
Venus. This is an amendment to the amendment being offered by Representative Severson. We're going to vote on the amendment to the amendment. Any discussion?
And Madam Chair, I think this puts it in the form that you want for the amendment.
And Representative Severson, is this from the Health Department?
Yes.
Okay.
I'm sure.
All those in favor of the amendment to the amendment? Representative Eastland.
Well, this amendment is made. Go ahead. I'll just keep the whole amendment.
All those in favor of the amendment to the amendment signify by saying aye.
Aye.
Opposed, no. Motion prevails. The amendment to the amendment is adopted. Now we're on the A44 amendment as amended. Representative Eastland.
Madam Chair, I think what I've kind of learned since we heard this bill in committee, and we talked quite a lot about this filter paper test and that sort of thing. And I guess what I have heard reported to me, at least anyway, about the filter paper test is that it is not a very accurate test in terms of the kind of test that we can do, and it has a tendency to return false positives. And I think if we're gonna put a test in place that's going to be used as a determination of whether or not lead is present, we should make sure that test is as accurate as possible and isn't returning false information. So I just think that this using this particular test is not the best tool to use actually to test for lead.
Representative Eastland, I think you're speaking in favor of the amendment then.
Yes.
Okay. I'm speaking in favor of the amendment. That's exactly what I'm
saying. Make sure. Okay. Any other discussion?
Madam Chair, could you clarify then, if we're eliminating the filter paper test, what's going to be substituted for that then?
You're going to be, at this point, there's going to be two things happening. They're going back to the Venus test, and we're studying the efficacy of the filter paper test before we come back. And there's great savings, members, and actually a lot less pain for some of the little ones. We're talking about toddlers, basically, here they're being tested. So there's a lot of people who think the filter test is here they're being tested. So there's a lot of people who think the filter test is great. But there are some questions, and so we're going to be, in this point, removing it. My understanding is what we're doing is studying it further and having recommendations come back for us to consider it. Representative Lane.
I believe the testimony we heard was that the filter paper test is not actually a test. It's a technology. The test is either capillary or venous draw. The technology to hold that information was the filter paper test, so that it was misuse of the language, and that they want to also verify whether or not which test is actually effective. So it had two points that were needing clarification.
Thank you. Any further discussion? If not, all those in favor of the A44 amendment as amended signify by saying aye.
Aye.
Opposed, no. Motion prevails, and that amendment is adopted. Next amendment. A14 amendment. Who would like to claim that?
Madam Chair, it's my amendment.
Representative McNamara moves the A14 amendment. Would you like to explain your amendment?
Madam Chair, and I've got some incorporating language that I would like to do.
You want to amend your amendment? We're happy to do that, Representative McNamara.
Madam Chair, I'd like to, at the bottom of my amendment, incorporate that the funding, and Madam Chair, I've got to find the funding amount. Would go to bridges, that the savings on this amendment would go to bridges, page 66, line 6. And I will defer to Ms. Lefevre to give me that amount so I don't say it wrong. And I could speak to the amendment, Madam Chair, while
Wait a minute. Let's speak to the amendment first. or at least I'd like to get the language for the amendment to the amendment first.
Okay.
That's what's on the table.
Just
Representative Moe.
Thank you, Madam Chair. We have several amendments to go, Madam Chair, and I would ask that maybe members of the committee be prepared if they're going to have amendments to their amendments. When we get to their amendments, perhaps they could have them ready. That would expedite this a little bit.
Madam Chair, to that point, we had all these amendments in order, and for some reason we're bouncing all around. We were prepared to do them in order, and I'm not exactly sure what happened, but we've been taking number 45. Now we're back number 14. So if you want to let us know the order they're going, we were prepared to take them in order.
That's reasonable. We'll give you the order, and I'm relying on my staff here, and we can try to do that shortly. Representative Shumper.
Madam Chair, I just observe, I don't think it's shuffling around for the right amendment that's taking time. It's adding these oral amendments that are not written that's taking a lot of time.
Why don't you go ahead, Representative McNamara, and explain what your amendment does. I think we understand where the language that you just told us where the money is going to go. Go ahead and explain your amendment, and then we'll come back to the amendment.
Madam Chair, the amendment would delete the study on line 12.23, the Lindane and Bifenol A study, and then on page 57, that's the study, Madam Chair, that it deletes, and then the funding would go to the Bridges program. And I think Ms. Lefevre was just going to give me, or I'm sorry, Ms. Cleveland is going to give me. And what it would do is on page 66, line 6, it would delete $5,150,000 and insert $5,266,000 in both places is what it would do, I believe, and I'll ask staff to clarify that. Yep, and I'm getting the word that is correct, Madam Chair. And Madam Chair, I would ask for a roll call on that. That's to we have so many studies in this bill for the Department of Health. I think it's important that we realize the importance of the Bridges program and the housing that it does for the mentally challenged, a terrific program. And I just think we have to be careful about overburdening the Department of Health and the opportunity to do more for the special needs of the homeless folks is really important. And based on that, Madam Chair, I would ask for a roll call.
Favor, do you have the language? The amendment to the amendment?
Madam Chairman, this is a little bit more complicated because the Bridges amount was amended in your office amendment. So I think perhaps it would be easier to just say on page 66, line 6, we will add $116,000 per year to the Bridges appropriation.
Is that what you want to do, Representative McNamara?
Yeah. Madam Chair, I got to admit, I'm not used to this process. Normally, the process I would have just said is to add it to Bridges, page 66, line 6, and staff would acknowledge that was okay. It's been the insistence that we read all this out exactly how it is, and that's unfortunate because it's a very simple oral amendment, and the process here is getting to be really bogged down because we don't want to just take a simple vote. Allow me to make a simple oral amendment to
Representative McNamara, we are definitely allowing you to make an oral amendment. We're just going to vote on it, and that's what I think you don't like. So, first of all, the amendment, can we read it again for the staff, please?
It would be on page 66, line 6,
add $116,000 per year to the appropriation.
Any further discussion? Not. See, is the roll call on this? Okay. Let's take the roll, please. This is on the amendment to the amendment.
Mark?
Nope.
Simpson?
No.
Eastland?
Yeah.
Kranz?
No.
Lane?
No.
Medora?
No.
McNamara?
Yes.
Mo?
No.
Morgan?
Pass.
Peterson?
Yes.
Severson?
Yes.
Wales?
Yes.
Jumper?
No.
Mm-hmm. Morgan?
Yes.
There being seven no's and six yeses, the amendment fails. The amendment to the amendment fails. We now are on the amendment, 814.
Madam Chair, I'll withdraw the amendment.
Ms. McNamara withdraws the 814 amendment. Let's see, we're going to try to give you a list here of the amendments. Here they are. I'm going to ask staff actually to read the order, if you can.
We have 22, 17, 21, 24, 46, 25, 21, I'm sorry, I already said that, and then 28, 29, 30, 31, 32, 33, 34, 35, 36, 37, 38, 43, 16 and 15.
No, we haven't done this yet. They were amended to the end of the amendment and voted on. Okay, members, we've got a lot of work ahead of us. Let's go. Next amendment then is 22. Who would like to claim amendment A22?
Madam Chair, that amendment was Representative Anderson's. He's in another committee right now.
You want to wait for him to come back?
We just later, if he comes in, otherwise I can offer it later.
Okay. The next one is number 17, I believe.
Thank you, Madam Chair. That is mine. And Madam Chair, this is for the Min and Able program.
Stevenson moves the A17 minute.
A17. Madam Chair, and that goes together with the A15 amendment. We can do two at one shot. We can kill two birds with one here.
Would you like to amend the A15 amendment to the A17 amendment?
That's correct, Madam Chair.
Representative Stevenson moves to amend the A15 to the A17 amendment. Would you like to explain your amendment to the amendment?
Yes, Madam Chair. The Min and Able program is a program that the governor has instituted, and it's been a pretty effective program, actually. It's been funding a lot of our abstinence programs, a lot of the programs that work within the community in the schools to not just teach abstinence, but also work on the self-esteem of the students themselves. In fact, we had testimony from the commissioner here that the program has been extremely effective, although underfunded. And I know I have one in my community that I spoke to in the committee that has done a tremendous job in the schools. I'm a substitute school teacher. I've seen the presentation, and it's extremely effective. The issue is that it was defunded in this bill, went down from, I believe it was $500,000 to $220 million. This amendment takes funding out of the birth defects program increase, which was $1.5 million, and puts that back into the Men and Able. The birth defects, though, it's a worthy program, members and Madam Chair. It's a program that's being funded now, and I but honestly, when I heard the process that they go through, there were some questions I had in terms of the opt-out process, whether or not parents are actually able to have their child not be put into a database. And I've got some serious concerns, and I think those will be some that will be raised as this whole bill goes to the floor. But my motion at this point, Madam Chair, is to delete the birth defects system increase. I'm not cutting them out of the budget. It's just decreasing their funding by the amount that was brought forward in this committee, and keeps them whole and level, and taking that and putting it back into the Men-Able, which was cut. And Madam Chair, I'd request a roll call on that.
Okay. Madam Chair. Roll call has been requested. Representative Moe.
So just to be clear then, we're amending A15 to A17. Is that correct?
I believe we're amending it the other way around.
Other way, A17
to A15. The A15 to the A17 amendment, that's right.
Correct.
So the amendment to the amendment is before us.
Thank you, Madam Chair. I would think that members would want to vote against amending if they're opposed to taking this money from this good program to another. We would vote against the oral amendment to the amendment as well as the amendment itself.
Madam
Chair, I request a roll call.
Representative McNamara, I request a roll call. Oh, I guess that all been requested. We're going to have, we'll just have one roll call, even though we have two of you requesting it. Okay. Any further discussion? Clerk will take the roll.
Clark?
No.
Benson?
No.
Eastland?
Yes.
Krim?
No.
Lane?
Yes.
Medora?
No.
McNamara?
Yes.
Mo?
No.
Morgan?
No.
Peterson?
Yes.
Severson?
Yes.
Quill?
Yes.
Jumper?
No.
The motion fails 7-6. So the amendment to the amendment is not adopted. Now the amendment is before us, Representative Severson. And this is the A-17 amendment. Can I just clarify for people what that does?
Hey, Madam Chair, that is basically getting rid of the Minnesota Birth Defects program and registry. And I think, you know, we have funding for that registry. And again, as was presented in committee, there are problems that I think we're going to see down the road here with parents who are having their children and then they are, without their consent, being registered into a system that keeps track of them from birth until death. And so we've got a huge system out there. The only way they got out of the system is to put in a request to opt out. Now, that doesn't kill their system. Now all it does is put a letter into their file that says you no longer, the parents in this particular have opted out of this program, but the file is still there, members. This is a data privacy issue. This has huge concerns down the road, and I would hope that you would vote this particular provision down. And it's, you know, I'm glad we've got this vote before us in the committee. This is what this committee is supposed to be doing, taking yes or no votes on these hard topics, and instead of just laying them over and then including them into a large morass. And, Madam Chair, I would request a roll call.
Representative Stevenson has requested a roll call. You might note to members, this is the, this birth defects registry is recommended by the governor to have 750 Well, that was Stephen. Excuse me, I got that wrong. Sorry. It's a different part that he has. Okay, never mind. Council, anything else?
No, sure. Point of information for me. Is this data collected by name? That is, or does it go into a pool of information about birth defects? I mean, is it individual children's names that are kept and then disseminated?
I'm not sure if we, I think Representative Madore, I think, did some looking into this. Representative Madore?
Yes, thank you, Madam Chair and Representative Benson. What this is that we are required to report certain birth defects, and information is put into an aggregate database. You're then visited by a public health nurse who discusses with you your child's birth defect and whether or not you would like to participate in a program. You're then enrolled into this program, and it's a database that tracks your child's progress. It's very, very useful for people that have very rare birth defects, and they have no way of tracking. Is it a situation that occurred in a community? Does it relate to, is it a way for the state, the Minnesota's health department, to be able to track if these very rare birth defects are on the increase? The data privacy issue is not one to be had. This is aggregate information on the upfront. It is not information that you, as a taxpayer, have access to. It's information that goes into the Department of Health database, and they track whether or not there's an increase on these level of very rare, very deforming birth defects. So that is what this is about, and I respectfully disagree with Representative Severson. As a parent who has a child with a birth defect, that information is valuable for me to be a part of. So I'm advocating for this program for my own personal interest in participating in it. It's been valuable. It is not something that I have never been communicated with regarding any information that I would find inappropriate. So, again, I think you have to err on the side of a parent who's participating and whether or not they feel their rights have been violated. And I can attest to that, but that's not been the case.
Madam Chair. Okay. The Stevenson Amendment is before us. Roll call has been requested. Clerk will take the roll.
Clark?
No.
Benson?
No.
Eastland?
Yes.
Franz?
No.
Lane?
No.
Madore?
No.
McNamara?
Yes.
Mao?
No.
Morgan?
No.
Peterson?
Yes.
Severson?
Yes.
Well, no. Jumper?
No.
The vote is 9-0, 4-yes. The motion does not prevail. Amendment is not adopted. Next amendment. 21. Who would like to sign this amendment?
Madam Chair, that's mine, and I would like to lay that one over.
And when it's right over?
Madam Chair, could you clarify what it means when the amendments are laid over here?
When they're laid over, we're not taking a vote on them, but they're laid over. If the author wishes to bring them back up again, he can ask the chair to bring them back up again. So it means that they're temporarily laid over, maybe is the way I should be describing it.
Okay, thank you.
And he didn't ask for it to be laid on the table, which would require an actual vote. So laying over is the discretion of the author and the chair.
Thank you, Madam Chair.
Number 24. You would like to claim this amendment? Mm-hmm. No one want to offer the deletion of the home visiting program?
I would lay. I will pull that one.
That one.
Withdraw. Thank you, Madam Chair. Yep.
Okay.
24.
Representative Stevenson withdraws A24. Next amendment is 46. Representative Moe.
Thank you, Madam Chair. The A46 amendment is mine. This is a bill that we heard here in this committee, Representative Aaron Peterson's bill. A couple technical changes on behalf of the EMSRB. Specifically, we're increasing the potential reimbursements for emergency medical care training, and also we're allowing that if there is a inter-facility transfer of a patient, that the driver of the ambulance doesn't have to be an EMT or paramedic. The driver, as long as there's an EMT or paramedic in the back, the driver could be a first responder. I think it's a non-controversial bill. Just didn't make it back to the committee in time.
Representative Eastland.
Madam Chair, I just want to speak in favor of this amendment. I think the EMTs are working hard, and they've got a lot of issues, and especially in the outstate areas, and so I think this is a good amendment. My only question is, Representative Moe, I'm looking at the time. You want to tell us when this was submitted?
Madam Chair,
I think our staff is just telling me this was reprinted. It was received this morning and was reprinted.
There was a request for this amendment yesterday.
I'm looking at when the amendment was printed, and it's gotten into it. It was printed at 12:41 today, it was put into our places after that. So I mean, I guess all I'm saying is I think we need to understand what's happening here, and I mean, there's some real interesting dynamics, and this is a good amendment, and I think we should be able to hear this amendment, because I think it's important to this bill, and I think it brings good things to the bill, as do a lot of the things that are brought to this table, and I just think we ought to be aware that if the bill was supposed to be here in earlier than it should have been in our package long before this.
Madam Chair, I don't.
If I can remind you in your own speech, or in the perhaps Representative McNamara's speech, our staff are working very hard. This was submitted yesterday on time, before the deadline. It's not a question. There was apparently an issue of reprinting it. Representative Moe?
My words exactly, and I think just to be clear, too, the Chair has been lenient, and we have voted on every amendment that has been brought to this committee.
Any further discussion on the amendment? Not members before us. All those in favor signify by saying aye.
Aye. Aye.
Opposed, no. Motion prevails, and that amendment is adopted. And we need a copy for our staff. Can I get a copy of that amendment from one of the members, please? It's the one we just voted on. We just need one here for the staff who didn't have one. I'll get the passwords over. The next amendment is number 25. No, excuse me. Uh-huh. Yeah, number 25. We would like to claim number 25. Anybody want to offer number 25? If not, we'll set it aside. Next amendment is number 28.
Madam Chair, we'll withdraw that amendment.
Yep.
Number 28 is withdrawn.
25.
Okay. Back to 25. Oh, 25 is withdrawn. Number 28, then.
And Madam Chair, perhaps I could clear some up here, if we could.
Okay.
Amendment 28, 29, 31, 32, 35, and 38 are withdrawn.
Could you go through that list again, please?
28, 29, 31, 32, 35, and 38.
Okay, Representative Stevenson, withdraws 31, 32, 35, and 38. We are now on amendment number 30. Who would like to offer amendment number 30?
30?
3-0.
Madam Chair, at 8:30. No, this is a different. This is different. What this amendment does is, in the bill on page 25, section 20, there it talks about bloodlet analysis and epidemiological information. And it talks like there's reports and there's some testing that's being done and there's some requirements and there's some laboratory methods and all that kind of thing. And what this is simply doing is just adding some comfort language so that if that's going to all happen, there's a lot of testing, a lot of data that's being collected. This simply just says a written consent of the parent must be received before that whole process goes into place and the information is kept and put into some kind of a database.
Representative Moe.
Thank you, Madam Chair. Representative Eastland, we when we were reviewing this amendment and others, we had some questions about the appropriateness of the Tennyson warning in addition to in written consent. And Representative Lane did some research on that, and she could read that and maybe interpret that for the committee. Our question is, and again, I'm not a lawyer, and I think Representative Eastland is, but the appropriateness of this particular warning for this procedure. So,
Well, I could make some comments. I don't think I can do quite as effectively as he said. But this is the part of the bill that we have reverted to original language. And it's in statute now, and statute is very clear about private. It's all privacy data. The Tennyson warning is in the statute. The fact that it's privacy data and how it's used is in the statute. I do not think we have any need to add it here. It's already taking original statute and saying it again. I don't think it has any relevancy to need to be said again.
I would disagree with that. I think what it says in statute, I believe, is that this is confidential and this is private data. What this amendment is doing is it's simply saying that it is private data, and we understand that, and the parents are simply saying, I agree to have my child do this, and the understanding is that it won't go anywhere else. And I think it's important that parents have some level of control over the data that's being kept on their kids. And I don't see any reason why 99.9% of the parents probably are fine with this. But there are people who aren't. And this is just simply some comfort language that if they aren't comfortable, they have an option here. I'd like a roll call, Madam Chair.
Roll call has been requested. Any further discussion? Take the roll.
Clark?
No.
Benson?
No.
Eastland?
Yes.
Sands?
Nope.
Lane?
No.
Medora?
No.
McNamara?
Yes.
Well?
No.
Morgan?
No.
Peterson?
Yes.
Severson?
Yes.
Will?
No.
Jumper?
No.
Okay, the vote is 9 no's, 4 yeses. The amendment fails. Motion fails, and amendment is not adopted. Next one is number 33.
Madam Chair, I'll withdraw that one.
Mr. Severson withdraws 833. The next amendment is 34.
I'm sorry, is that 834, Madam Chair?
34.
Yeah, then I'll withdraw that one.
834 is on. By Representative Severson. The next one is, I believe, 36. Sorry, the next amendment is 836. I'm sorry.
And I'll withdraw that one as well, Madam Chair.
Representative Stevenson deletes, withdraws 36. Next amendment is 37. Any 37 before us?
Madam Chair, I believe that one's mine. And Madam Chair, this again, this goes to some of the data privacy issues that we're having some major concerns with. And the record itself, as they go to page 40, line 9, talks about health. The amendment would turn that, insert private, and delete the health. And what that does is the health is a word that opens up the access to that particular record. The private begins to bring it back down and give more control over the individual over that record. And that's kind of the context of the amendment, Madam Chair.
Thank you. Any further discussion? Representative Lane.
Madam Chair, this speaks directly to what I referred to before, because it says what's being changed here is health data. Data collected by under this program are health data under Section 13.3805, and 13.305 says all this data is private. So we don't have to say private data is private. You know, it is.
Any further discussion? Representative Eastland.
Madam Chair, there's some language also in statute that gives the health department the right to use information. It's private. They're not releasing it, but they're using it for other purposes. And I think it's only fair that we recognize that some parents are very concerned about this. And what's so wrong with allowing parents, allowing people to be able to write or be able to sign off and say that they approve or disapprove of what we're doing? I just think it's a safety issue, and I think we should give, if it's going to be a decision about who has more rights, I think we want to be on record of having more rights in the hands of parents.
Any further discussion? Representative Schumper.
Madam Chair, Representative Stevenson and Representative Eastland. You know, increasingly I feel like you and perhaps other people in this room are getting the wrong feeling about where many of us feel about privacy rights. I think we're all equally concerned as you are. It's just really difficult to navigate through this maze of laws that are already on the books and proposals coming from you and from other committees that we've all sat on during the session here. And, you know, we're trying very hard to create programs here that can help us track everything from toxins in the environment to birth defects. And I think all of us are trying very hard to come up with a balanced approach to this. And so I don't want you all to think that we aren't as concerned as you are with the whole privacy issue. I certainly am. And, you know, for example, Representative Stevenson, in your motion here, why would we delete that part where it says under Section 13.3805 when Representative Lane just explained that that sort of included what you're trying to accomplish here?
I would have to look up. Thank you, Madam Chair. I'd have to look up that particular provision, so I can't speak to that.
Representative Lane can help you out right there. It looks like,
Madam Chair, I could help as well.
Where did that come from? We are not taking any testimony from the public. Thank you. Okay, Representative Stevenson, was that helpful?
To an extent, Madam Chair, and I think, again, I would prefer to go ahead with the amendment. And I understand Representative Schumper's line of reasoning here as well. I think there are issues that are much bigger, and I'm not a data privacy guru, and I think part of the process here is that we have had people look at this, and this is of a concern, and I think this was one small chip in a large bag of potato chips that you could give me, because I've pulled all the rest of them.
Madam Chair.
Representative Lane.
I would just suggest that the keeping Section 13.3805 is much clearer and says in statute this is private data. It will not be disclosed except under these circumstances. That's much stronger than just eliminating that and saying it's private than what would the word private mean.
Thank you, Madam Chair, for that point. And I think what we're doing is we're saying that there is data that is gathered here, and that we're giving that authority to somebody else to use that data. We're saying, except under certain circumstances, we're pulling the authority away from the individual to whom that data belongs. And I'll tell you, members, this is kind of strikes close to home when you're a veteran and you have a laptop stolen out of Washington that has literally tens of thousands of names on it, and they're trying to access that thing. And nobody knows where it is, and all of a sudden somebody may have your file. And that kind of goes to the whole issue of data privacy and who's got those numbers and what are they going to do with it. Everybody has great intentions, except one. Now, is that one person going to get a hold of it? That's the question that's what goes to the heart of this, members. And I would ask for a chip.
Any further discussion? If not, Representative Benson.
May I suggest to Representative Severson that maybe we could give him a very big thank you for pulling those others? Would that be part of it?
Okay. If not, the amendment is before us. All those in favor signify by saying aye.
Aye.
Opposed, no?
No.
Motion will not prevail, and the amendment is not adopted. Next amendment.
Save the chips for you guys.
Number 37.
Would it be 37?
That was 37. 43. Who wants to claim that one? 43.
Madam Chair, if that is one that our caucus has presented, I'll withdraw it. It was drafted at 11:37 a.m.
Representative McNamara withdraws 43. Number 16.
Madam Chair.
It wasn't meant to be representative number.
Madam Chair, I want to say, given that people on both sides of the political aisle here have drafted amendments late this morning, I certainly would not object to considering Representative McNamara's amendment.
Okay. Any further discussion? What do we have left? 16. Is there anybody who wants to do 16? It was rolled into a previous amendment. We don't need to do it again, but I'm just going to make sure that if somebody wants to do it, they have the opportunity. The same thing with number 15. Any others? I guess I think that's the last one. No? Okay, we're not done. Representative Eastman.
Madam Chair, I think when we did the 822 amendment, it was Representative Anderson's amendment. We laid it over. He hasn't come in here. I would offer it.
We can do number 40 and someone can try to go get him. You want to try to do that?
Yeah.
We just missed 40 in the lineup, so. Whose amendment is number A40? Anybody want to claim number 40?
I mean, I'll...
Representative Eastman?
If I can find it. I thought somebody else was going to offer that one. I'll offer this, Madam Chair. So I'd move the 840 amendment. Basically, what this amendment does, Madam Chair, is it removes the biomonitoring language from the health tracking and biomonitoring. And I guess the reason we're doing that is the biomonitoring is the section that takes samples, human samples, and tests, and does those different kinds of things. And the health, I understood the health tracking is more looking at the environment and looking at other causes that could be out there. And what we would rather see, or what I would rather see, and I could offer it as an amendment. That was the intent here, but if we don't want to do that, that's fine. But I would rather see that we would do some research and reporting on emerging environmental kind of contaminants in general. We do a lot of that in here, in some directing some specific things, and I think it would be more useful, from my perspective anyway, if we had the health department just looked at the whole issue of environmental contaminants and came back with a recommendation of the ones that they thought were the most significant and that we would look at. And so basically what I'm proposing at this point is that we just take the biomonitoring out of this and we look at the health tracking, and we assume that that means that we're going to get a broader look at all kinds of contaminants in our environment, and the health department can make some recommendations about what we should do in terms of restricting them. So that's really the intent of this amendment, ma'am.
Any further discussion on this amendment? If not, the motion is before us. All those in favor signify by saying aye.
Aye.
Opposed, no.
No.
No. Motion does not prevail, and the amendment is not adopted. Well, apparently we skipped number 18.
I'll withdraw number 18.
Number 18 is withdrawn. Is Senator Anderson here? Would you like to offer his amendment?
I'll offer his amendment for him, ma'am.
And what number was that?
It's A22.
The A22 amendment.
Yeah, this is Representative Anderson's amendment. It deals with the Monticello power plant and the testing of the radioactive off-gassing that happens there. Representative Anderson said that there's a significant amount of work and effort that's already going into that. We talked to the health department. They are already collecting data, and they will be looking at that much more closely within about a year. And so this process is happening already, and it's going to come under much closer health department jurisdiction. And, I mean, it's really a redundant request at this point. And it would take the burden off of them having to take a hold of this right now and just continue the process that's in place. So I would just ask that we support the A22 amendment, and I'd ask for a roll call, Madam Chair.
Roll call has been requested. Representative, just on one of the things that we heard from the people that brought this language before us is that they want to make sure that the community is informed. And that hasn't happened. One of the concerns raised by the folks who brought this original language that's in the bill before us was they were concerned that the community would receive the information, and that's basically what this language does. It doesn't keep it in some place that's not available to the community, and it also looks at the health impacts. So I would urge members to defeat this amendment.
Madam Chair, I guess I wasn't prepared to offer, but the question I guess is what does the bill require the health department to do?
If you look on page 62, I believe that's what you're attempting to delete. It requires them to work with the utility to issue a report that details where radiation releases go. That's not being done now. And then also look at the health impacts and to report that to the committees that have jurisdiction over the public health and to all the communities that are part of the emergency response planning. So the towns and the cities that are nearest will be receiving that information as well as the legislative body. By 208.
Madam Chair. My point, Madam Chair, is that the health department is in the process of providing more oversight over this right now, and to impose a study at this point could be very, very redundant in terms of what they're trying to accomplish. I mean, if we want to ask them to give us a report when they're finished with their testing and their oversight, I think would be more than appropriate. But it seems that we're putting a lot of requests on them at this point, and this happens to be one thing that they are already doing, and they are in the process of developing that oversight.
President Issa, I'll just tell you that I haven't heard any objection from the health department, and if as what you say is true, and I assume it is, maybe that's why there's no objection that I've heard. And there's no cost as well. There's a cost. It's a very small cost. And I think it was like $50,000, close to that anyway. Representative Benson.
Thank you, Madam Chair. I would like to ask Representative Eastland, what is the date or when is the time that this this work with the health department will be finished.
Madam Chair, I think the, as I understand, the health department is already exercising some control over at the Prairie Island plant, and they are collecting data now, and within about a year, they are going to be, more involved in the monitoring of what's happening in the Monticello plant.
Representative Benson.
Madam Chair, are you saying then that they will be finished basically with the work by January 1st, 2008, which is the date for this report?
Representative Eastman.
Madam Chair, I cannot speak for the Health Department. I am just speaking based on a conversation that I had with a representative from the Health Department.
Any further discussion? The amendment is before us. We do have a roll call. Clerk will take the roll.
Clark?
No.
Simpson?
No.
Eastland?
Yes.
Kranz?
No.
Lane?
No.
Medora?
No.
McNamara?
No.
Mo?
No.
Morgan?
No.
Peterson?
No.
Severson?
Yes.
Quayle?
No.
Jumper?
No.
Eleven to two, the motion does not prevail, and the amendment is not adopted. We have the A11 amendment still. Members, this is actually my amendment, the A11 amendment. This amendment modifies the first defects registry by having a trained health worker interview parents about addresses, occupations, places of work, time and place of any military service, and known occasions or sites of toxic exposures. And I guess just to say again, as was discussed earlier by one of our witnesses from the public, occupational exposure is a very important part of understanding the epidemiology of disease. Many countries throughout the world that have any kind of data collection and do epidemiology do collect this information, particularly on occupation. Canada does. I know we have a number of states that do. And I guess we're trying to bring Minnesota into the light here and make sure that we collect that basic information as well. Any further discussion? Not? All those in favor?
I'm sure.
Representative Peterson.
You're going to vote on the bill now?
This is the amendment, A11 amendment. We'll get there. Any further discussion? Representative Lane.
Well, once again, it has the parents being interviewed for known occasions or sites of toxic exposures. It's very subjective, and in a situation where parents are dealing with a newborn that has birth defects, I don't think you're going to be able to get any kind of reliable, valid information about known occasions or sites of toxic exposures. I would like to address that in a different form that may be more objective, but not this way.
Any further discussion? All those in favor signify by saying aye.
Aye.
Aye. Opposed, no?
No.
That should be veiled, and then it's adoption. I think that was our last one. We had two that were laid over. Do authors wish to bring them back?
No, we'll try those, Madam Chair.
The A19 and the A21 amendments are both. Okay, it looks like people want to go home tonight.
Which number is it? A21.
Thank you. Okay. Committee members, the bill, as amended many times, is before us. Discussion to the bill.
Madam Chair.
Representative Peterson.
Thank you, Madam Chair. I anxiously came on this committee this year because I wanted to talk about it. And I look at the bill and I see that the area that which I wanted to address was on the first three pages and the last seven pages. We spent most of our time talking in the public health area, which is clear outside my pay grade, which I don't have a great deal of understanding. But I do understand the housing part, and I do understand the need for predictability in housing. I also understand the frustration, what I also had on the Capital Bonding Committee, about creating a responsibility, financial responsibility, for our future legislatures. And I continue to look at this bill, and I see the use of TANF funds being sent into housing. I look at the drop-off of the years 2010 and 2011, which is going to require, A, the housing components and many of the human service areas that deal with homeless and youth and transitional housing will not know how to predict their futures in those time frames. And it just seems to me that that is an enormous deficiency of this bill, especially a bill that does not meet up with a Senate counterpart, a Senate companion, so the bill is going to get pulled apart. And the bill is going to get pulled apart, I suppose, in finance, where part of it goes off into a Senate housing and part of it into public health. And so I'm concerned that I'm going to have to now vote no on a bill that I wanted to weigh in on housing, but it is the absolute inappropriate way to fund housing. And I need to voice that frustration, and I would love to hear somebody explain to me what is going to happen in the year 2010 and 2011, and how do we backfill the needs that TANF would typically cover? And I think there are people in this audience that probably need to hear that explanation also. And I don't know who can give it, and I would just assume, Madam Chair, that you might be able to give some clarity.
Is that a question?
If you're willing to answer it, yes, ma'am.
Sure. I'm always willing to answer your questions. Let me just say my perspective is, in many ways, I agree with you on the issue of the TANF funding. That was not our choice. I do believe that you and I, if we're back here in those years, 2010 and 2011, or people better than us are back here, they will do the right thing. That's what I have to count on. In the meantime, we need to deal with the issues here today. We have homeless youth that we're trying to address, which you've been a strong supporter of, I know, in terms of discussions, and I appreciate that. We have many people who are facing mortgage foreclosure. We have middle-class families who can't become homeowners increasingly. We have some serious health issues. We have an epidemic of cancer and other things that we don't understand the causes of, and we're trying to look at sources of environmental and other kinds of causes. And I think, and we have hungry people who are not, you know, being able to be fed. And so I think all of those issues and more are addressed in this bill. And I have to just make an act of faith, I guess, that you and I and others who may be back here will work on ensuring that the tails that are a concern for all of us are addressed. In the meantime, we have about three other stops at least before this bill is completed. And so some of the answers to your question may be taken care of before the session adjourns, and I certainly hope so.
Madam Chair.
Representative Peterson.
And I know the frustration you're going through, and I know how difficult it is. But again, my concern is that we are burdening future legislators, making them assume responsibility for a hole that we're leaving them, in a marketplace that needs predictability and needs brick houses, not straw houses. So when the wolf comes to huff and puff, they could say, not by the hair on my chinny chin chin. So, Madam Chair, I would ask for a roll call.
Roll call has been requested. Any other discussion to the bill? Representative Moore.
Thank you, Madam Chair. I just want to thank a few people. I want to thank our staff. I know they did work till midnight last night and many late hours, and especially the last few days, and
It's been a labor of love for the most part, I think. And you, Madam Chair, your passion for these issues is demonstrated in the work that you've created here and tried to bring a lot of us along with you, educating us in the process, and thanking the advocates who have educated many of us on the housing issues that Representative Peterson has talked about. It's a challenging issue also for this caucus to decide where our priorities lie. And I think it's very important that we have a target in this committee and a bill that is not dependent upon a tax bill, whether a tax bill fails or not. This bill stands on its own, and I think that's very important. We would have liked to have all general fund money, but that wasn't the option that we had. So the chair and the committee put together the best bill they possibly could, and I think given the finances that we had to work with, this bill will stand on its own. And I, of course, will be supporting it wholeheartedly.
Thank you, Representative McNamara.
Thank you, Madam Chair. Madam Chair, I just want to say thank you for bringing all the different folks that you brought forward for us to become better informed as we dealt with this. And while I might not have liked some of the process today, Madam Chair, I absolutely want you to know I've never questioned how much and how compassionate you are and how important these issues are to you. I know that, and I just want to say they're important to us, too. And I'm glad that we were able to do so much good in this bill. And like Representative Peterson, unfortunately, I'm not going to be able to support the bill in its entirety. But, Madam Chair, I'm glad to see in the legislature some of these folks have gotten to come to the table like they have in the last year. I think that's very important. And there are a lot of people that unfortunately aren't blessed as well as some of us at the table. It just never had those cards fall in the wrong direction. And I'm glad that we got to see a lot of them. And I want to say, Madam Chair, I absolutely mean it. Where we have our differences, it's not that we ever question your compassion or your desire to do what's right. We just may differ on the role that government can play.
Thank you. Other comments, committee members? Well, let me just say, Representative Peterson.
Thank you, Madam Chair. And as minority leader, Madam Chair, I appreciate, as well as the others, your passion. I do want to say thanks so much to staff. I mean, it was firestorm last night and this morning, and I know that you guys spent a lot of time, and we're kind of kicking into gear here, and it's gonna get even more interesting. But I do think you know, the bill has good sides and not so good sides. I think we've got you know, a train wreck en route here. If we don't have a huge amount of revenue increase, if we're looking at $1 billion in tax increase, and it hits our commercial sector, and we turn into another 2003, where we had a $4.5 billion budget deficit. This is one of those programs that will be cut to the bone again. So we're pumping them up to let them down, pumping them up to let them down. I'm not sure that's a healthy way to go. I think what we need to do is use a fiscally restrained system, much as the governor has put together here, add some money to the base, put some one-time monies in, and something that we can sustain in the future. I do, on the other portions of the bill, I think there's some issues with those portions, and that's why I won't be able to, one of the reasons I won't be able to vote for the bill, but I do appreciate your passion for these issues, Madam Chair. And for the rest, I guess one of the things that I would have liked to have seen is a little more ability to discuss and vote instead of just lay over. That was one of my frustrations with the committee, but be that as may, it's been a pleasure. Thank you, Madam Chair.
Thank you.
Thank you, Madam Chair. I would like to thank you, Madam Chair, also, and the committee members. And something nobody has mentioned yet, this is an interesting committee. It has kind of an overload of freshman Democrats on it. And I guess I'd like to thank you guys for just the input, to get a chance to spar and get to know each other. I mean, some of the philosophical differences of the legislative process have been clearly emerged in this committee, and we've had good debate, good discussion, and I think and there are some good things. There are some very good things in this bill. I think we're dealing with an area, you know, that oftentimes Republicans are viewed as not being very sympathetic toward, and I disagree with that. I think Republicans have a lot of concern for some of the issues that we're dealing with here in homelessness and public health and some of those areas. We differ on maybe what the solutions are, but I'd like to thank the chair for the work she's done, and all of you in the minority as well, or in the majority as well, and I I just want to reiterate that what happens in this process, I think we all know, is we've got a product here. It's not perfect. You're never going to stick 15, 20 people in a room and come up with something you all agree on. There's some good things in here. There's some things that aren't so good in here. And we look forward to watching this as it moves forward. And hopefully when we pass something out in the final the end of the process that we can send to the governor and the pieces that it goes in, that we can make a strong statement for the concerns that this committee dealt with. That's my goal, and that's our goal going forward here. And so I just want to thank everybody for the process and for, I think it's been an enjoyable committee, and I've enjoyed getting to know each of you.
Thank you, Representative Eastland. I don't know, maybe we should have some more amendments since we're staying along here. But we are going to get out of here. Let me just start. I actually was going to comment that one of the things that's been enjoyable to me on this committee are all the new faces and the new learning that I've got to experience from all of our new freshman DFLers and our veteran Republicans. I just really appreciate it. I've learned something from every one of you, and I hope that'll continue. And I not only do we have fabulous new DFLers, but we have fabulous new staff this year. Except for Gina Favor, I think every single one of our staff who's worked with this committee are new, right? And so we're grateful to all of you. And I want to start by thanking my sidekicks here. Brooks and Lauren, I want to say you've put in a lot of hours in the last couple of weeks, but in general you just jumped in and we've all learned together. So I'm very grateful for your willingness to learn and to be so faithful to the process. And Emily, you've put in many, many hours, the two of you, in recent months, and no, thank you. You've had to redo and do spreadsheets and try to figure out how to meet the demands of people trying to understand these numbers, so I want to thank you for that. Our pages, Nina and Katie have been usually our pages, so I want to thank you, but today we have Jennifer with us too, so I thank you. Well, you've been just great. Thank you for all that, your help keeping us online here. Melva Radke came to us a little bit in the process as we started. Melva, thank you. You came over from the Senate, right? So you're new to us? And I appreciate that. Joe upstairs has been very helpful to us, and I want to say several people mentioned it today, but I think both you and Jean were here till midnight last night, and maybe others. So thank you very much. You're again new to the process and did an excellent job for us. I want to say a little bit about the bill, which is I think a good beginning on a lot of things that some of us have worked on for a lot of years, and some of you have had the chance to work on for the first time. And it's the beginning of a process. And as we go forward, I presume some of us in this room will be in a conference committee together, and hopefully we'll carry the desires of all of you who've expressed them to us into that realm. We don't exactly even know what conference committee this bill will be a part of yet, so that's still to be determined, but I just want to say that my door is certainly open to continue to evolve the issues that we've dealt with here. So I think there was an offer to work with the governor from one of my Republican colleagues to bring the voice of this committee to the governor. I just want to ask you to help us do that. We may need that help as we go along to possibly to get some more resources into this. So we did take a significant part of his proposals, and then we added to it. We recently added almost in areas of housing in particular. So the bill is before us, and the motion is that House File 2241 be recommended to pass and go to the Finance Committee as amended, then amended and amended. And the roll call has been requested. Any further discussion? If not, we'll take the roll.
Clark?
Yes.
Benson?
Yes.
Eastland?
No.
Clans?
Yes.
Lane?
Yes.
Medora?
Yes.
McNamara?
No.
Moe?
Yes.
Morgan?
Yes.
Peterson?
No.
Severson?
No.
Wales?
Yes.
Shumpert?
Yes.
Thank you.
There being nine ayes and four nays, the bill is passed as amended, and we refer it to the Committee on Finance. Can I just say one other thing to committee members? In addition to the work that will be going forward with the Conference Committee, this I would expect and intend that this committee will, I don't know that we'll meet anymore here this year, but we will have some interim hearings, and I'm interested in what you are interested in us discussing and where you might like to go with interim hearings. So please be in touch with me about that. This committee is adjourned.